I get up each morning and dust off my wits, open the paper and read the obits. If I'm not in there, I know I'm not dead, so I eat a good breakfast and go back to bed. And how do I know my youth is all spent? My get up and go just got up and went. But in spite of it all, I'm able to grin and think of the places my get up has been. How do I know my youth is all spent? My get up and go just got up and went. But in spite of it all, I'm able to grin and think of the places my get up has been.
Well, I got a friend named Whiskey Sam. He was my boonie rat buddy for a year and now. He said, I think my country got a little off track. Took him 25 years to welcome me back. But it's...
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. After hearing reports of serious workplace violations, the Brooklyn-based Fifth Avenue Committee launched an investigation of their own with shocking results. In a recently revealed report, organizers document several cases where supermarket janitors were working 14-hour shifts overnight without paid overtime.
And not only are they not getting overtime or in many cases not even minimum wage, but supermarket managers lock them in.
Artemio Guerra is organizing director for the Fifth Avenue Committee and found 36 grocery stores that were locking in their workers overnight.
It's illegal. They're violating fire code regulations. We're violating, obviously, the OSHA standards, you know, safety and health standards for the workplace. They're violating, somebody will even claim that they're violating the civil rights of these workers by falsely imprisoning them. They do it because they can, and they do it because the workers are very vulnerable and they're not going to complain.
A gay appointee has resigned in New York City over the mayor's opposition to legislation that would expand domestic partner benefits. Matt Foreman, executive director of the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, wrote to the mayor saying he had to resign out of principle. Scheduled to take effect on October 27th, the law would require companies with city contracts worth at least $100,000 to provide health, family, and bereavement benefits to domestic partners, gay or straight. The city council passed the legislation in May, and Mayor Michael Bloomberg vetoed it, but the city council overrode the veto. Last week, the Bloomberg administration sued to stop the new law. Bloomberg spokesman Jordan Borowitz said the administration filed suit because the law violates state and federal law. Picket lines of union electricians and carpenters formed near the construction site of a new Kroger supermarket in Ann Arbor, Michigan. The workers, represented by the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 252, are upset that the contractor is using out-of-town labor to get around a higher prevailing wage for local union members. They say that the Bosselman Corporation isn't paying the level of wages set by the U.S. Labor Department for the local market.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. When it comes to raising cash for candidates, big-time political fundraisers are strictly bipartisan. Both Bush and Kerry agree Iran and Iraq have supported terrorism, and both candidates say that those who harbor or finance terrorism are just as guilty. What does that mean when the 27 leading fundraisers for both Bush and Kerry do just that? 19 Bush and 9 Kerry fundraisers have been found guilty of running companies that did business with terror-supporting regimes in the past. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
So, Jasper, how was your year?
Excellent. This administration gives the best returns ever.
Do tell.
Well, the money I paid to a lobbying firm in Washington brought in over $50 million in overseas contracts.
Oh, yes, lobbying pays.
Are you still into commodities, Max?
No, I'm funding politicians. My campaign contributions got me over $100 million worth of regulation waivers.
Well done, Max.
Today's wisest investments are in politics. Where are you throwing your money?
Easily paid for by billionairesforbush.com.
Maybe you're one of the 2 million Americans who've recently had their jobs offshore to India, Pakistan, and elsewhere. Or one of the millions more expected to have your job shipped abroad in the next few years. If so, don't worry, bucko, for a new growth industry has arisen that offers exciting job opportunities for you discarded Americans. You, too, could become an American accent and culture trainer. It seems that while such corporations as Citibank, Dell, GE, and Microsoft are eager to abandon the U.S. and move their telephone service jobs to low-wage workers abroad, these English-speaking foreign workers are, well, foreign. So their accents and cultural references can be jarring to U.S. customers placing orders or seeking help. Thus, offshoring companies are hiring Americans to teach foreign replacement workers to sound and behave like Americans. Yes, this means you could end up teaching the Indian or Pakistani or Russian who was given your job how to sound like you. Courses in American Culture 101 include U.S. history memorization, American slang, basic sports knowledge, and pop culture. Quick, what's the Lone Star State? Who are the Florida Marlins? Can you name one talent that Britney Spears has? What's a burrito? The lesson plans for these courses include having to watch episodes of Friends and screening such films as Bruce Almighty. As for accents, there are voice exercises for Indians, for example, to help them lower their natural high-pitched and clipped pronunciation of English. And if the exercises are not enough, the corporate call centers use technology to filter the telephone voices of the foreign service reps, making them sound lower than they are. This is Jim Hightower saying, of course, it won't be long before the corporations train low-paid foreigners to teach American accents and culture to foreign workers. Then there'll be no need for American workers at all.
I have these nightmares. This taco, not just an ordinary taco, but this big, evil taco is haunting me.
Guacamole.
You see, I was exposed to credit cards in college, and I wasn't the most responsible person back then.
Go, go, go!
I mean, I heard the words credit card and thought, hey, free money! Plane ticket to spring break? Credit card. New skis? Credit card. 135 taco dinners? Bam! Credit card. But hey, it's not too late to do something about your credit. Get ScorePower from Equifax.com. ScorePower gives you your credit report, credit score, and it puts you on the road toward the credit you deserve for just $14.95. So, check out Equifax.com today and get that taco you ate 7 years ago out of your life.
Get ScorePower at Equifax.com or 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Adios, taco.
Get the power. Score power at Equifax.com.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, broadcasting from terrestrial radio stations from California to North Carolina, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org. Just a couple, our telephone number, by the way, 1-866-889-8894. Website TomHartman.com. If you'd like to drop into the chat room, folks already showing up there for the day's program. Just a couple of quick announcements. Tomorrow I will be in Washington, D.C. at the Heritage Foundation. Alan Colmes and I are going to be debating four conservative talk show hosts in a three-hour thing that is going to be videotaped by C-SPAN. I don't believe they're going to be broadcasting live tomorrow, and I don't have a broadcast date, but it's they're going to be there, and we're going to be there. And so that'll be an interesting food fight. Unfortunately, we can't broadcast that. So Rama Schneider is going to be in here doing the show for me tomorrow, and because Bernie Sanders is like such a favorite of mine, I just, I asked Bernie if he could change from tomorrow to today. So today we're going to do our Brunch with Bernie segment. One other tip, a week from Friday, that is a week from next Friday, or that is next Friday, the following Friday, C-SPAN is going to be broadcasting our program live. So, I'll give you more information on that as time goes by. Congressman Bernie Sanders in 1991 became the first independent congressman elected in 40 years to the House of Representatives. He's since been reelected 5 times, the longest-serving independent in the history of the House of Representatives. Congressman Sanders, welcome to Brunch with Bernie.
Good to be with you, Tom. And by the way, congratulations on getting this kind of national recognition that you deserve. at a time when so much of radio is just right-wing drivel, you've done a great job, and you're providing an alternative voice out there for large numbers of people, and keep up the great work.
Well, thank you. It's very kind of you. What are you seeing happening? I am getting so many calls from people all around the country about election fraud, these phony fraud organizations set up by former Enron lobbyist Ed Gillespie and his Republican National Committee, that are throwing away ballots that when people say that they're Democrats, and the spooky stuff
happening
in Florida.
And this whole situation in Florida remains a mess. One would have thought that after 4 years they might have had the time to get it right, but it appears that is not the case. I think what we will see, though, is Kerry being a lot stronger and more vigorous than Gore was in making sure that the votes are in fact counted and moving legally if there are any disputes.
Yeah, we have their number now. I mean, it's this article in, I think it's the Atlantic Monthly or Harper's this month. I read it on a plane last week about Karl Rove's strategy in all the elections that he's managed before. He had one that ran 14 months in the courts before this guy who had lost in the polls ended up winning in the courts. He just did in 2000 exactly what he had done several times before. And the Democrats.
But the bottom line here is that people should come out to vote and make sure that you are registered, make sure that your vote is counted, because as everyone has stated 100 times over, this is in fact the most important election in American history. And every listener can play a huge role by bringing out 2, 3, 4 people who otherwise would not have voted. If you do that, it'll have a significant impact about what happens on November 2nd.
Absolutely. If our listeners have questions, comments, thoughts for Congressman Bernie Sanders, our number 1-866. That's one of these new toll-free, newfangled toll-free numbers, 1-866-889-8894, toll-free across the United States for Congressman Bernie Sanders. Bernie, speak for a minute about the consequences of a Bush election. If George Bush gets elected, what's that going to mean for the United States, in your opinion, militarily,
it'll be
Supreme
a disaster,
Court?
In my view. I think if you look very objectively at what's been happening in this country over the last 4 years, what have we seen? We've seen poverty increasing. We've seen the middle class shrinking, family median income declining, people working longer hours for low wages. On the other hand, what we have also seen is that the wealthiest people in this country have never had it so good, and Bush, therefore, has given them hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks. We've seen the disintegration in our health care system. 5 million more Americans today lack any health insurance. 45 million more and more people are underinsured. We continue to pay the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs. George Bush has decided that while the middle class is struggling, that he's going to take away overtime pay for 6 million American workers. We have millions more who are working for a $5.15 miserable minimum wage, and Bush does not give one second of thought to raising that minimum wage. We're looking at a president who has received an F rating from environmental groups, worst environmental president in modern American history. And the damage that he's doing will be irreversible. We're looking at a president who, given the opportunity, and he will have that opportunity during the next 4 years, will be appointing extreme right-wingers to the Supreme Court. Goodbye Roe versus Wade and a woman's right to choose. Goodbye important civil liberties that we as Americans have enjoyed for several hundred years. So, to my mind, if you think that the last 4 years have been bad, if you think that this president has been an extreme right-winger, wait to the next 4 years, because it will be even worse. But the truth of the matter is, having said that, we don't want to look and see what the next 4 years bring us. We want to make sure that Bush is not reelected. And I think we can do that. We can do that if the voter turnout is high. We can do that if working people come out and vote, lower-income people, young people come out and vote. And that's clearly what we've got to work on in the next week and a half.
Yeah, well said. Our lines are all lit up. Let's go to the phones, 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Bob in Carbondale, Illinois. I'm assuming, Bob, you're listening to WINI there.
Oh, yes.
Hey, Bob, welcome to the program.
I got a favor to ask you.
Okay.
Drop the term class.
Why?
Start using the word income. We fought 3 or 4 wars in this country to get rid of the class idea.
Well, let me respond to Bob on that one. Bob, the reality of what's happening in America today, define it, use what words you may want to use, is that in reality there really is a war going on against the middle class and working families. When large companies, with the support of the President of the United States, throw American workers out on the streets, close down plants and move to China and hire people there at 30 cents an hour, that's kind of warfare to my mind. That is just an attack on the existence, if you like, on the well-being of millions of American families. Class is an issue, whether we like that term or not. And the reality in America that we don't talk about enough is that we have a handful of very, very wealthy and powerful people who control our economy. They're the ones who are throwing American workers out on the street and moving abroad. They control our political process. They contribute huge amounts of money to candidates who end up doing their bidding. They control the media to a very significant degree. So I think focusing on who has the power in America and what they are doing with that power and why it is that the wealthiest people are becoming richer while the middle class is shrinking and poverty is increasing, I think it is important to talk about that. Why do you think not, Bob?
Well, I just don't like the term.
Okay.
I prefer myself. I agree with so much of what goes on here in this program. I listen to it daily. But the word class just itches me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, fair enough. But it is. Do you agree with me, Bob, that it is important?
Oh, absolutely.
About the power of these large corporations and wealthy individuals?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay.
No question about it.
You know, we have a situation where about 1% of the American population owns about 90% of all the wealth in the United States.
Oh, they own more wealth than the bottom 90%. And that gap between the rich and the poor is growing wider. There was just a piece out in the media the other day where the CEOs of large corporations now are earning 500 times what their workers are making. And I think what we're dealing with here, Tom and Bob, it's not just an economic issue, you're dealing with a moral issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are we satisfied in America to see poverty increase, have the highest rate of childhood poverty in the industrialized world, while we're seeing a huge increase in the number of millionaires and billionaires? Is that what America is supposed to be about? I think not.
And in the mind of the conservatives, that is what America is supposed to be about.
That's right.
Increasingly.
That's right.
And increasingly they're being blatant about it. In fact, we're going to have a couple of them on later in the day here in the program to debate those issues with. 1-866-889-8894. Jim in Ypsilanti, Michigan on the line. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program. You must be listening on WSDS.
Yeah, WSDS in Ypsilanti. Hey, thanks, Tom. This is my third call to you, but yeah, I stopped in the Secretary of State's office here in Michigan, and I asked them about voter registration here. They said if the states ask for your party affiliation, that's a violation of your civil rights because it's a private thing, and they don't ask for that here in Michigan.
In other words, in Michigan, you don't have to be registered as, for example, a Republican to vote in the Republican primary.
No, you can, whatever you vote as, you do that at the polling booth.
Yeah.
You say what you're going to do at.
Yeah. Well, that varies.
Different states, those are decisions made by the states, and different states have different rules. In some states, to vote in a Republican or Democratic primary, you have to register as a Democrat or a Republican. Other states, you can walk in and get any ballot that you want, and there is no party registration.
Right. That's what they're doing here now because...
Mm-hmm. Whoop. I'm sorry. Jim, I'm sorry. My apologies.
I just
dumped
Jim into the stratosphere.
He got me so excited. I had my finger on the button and I pushed it the wrong way. I'm sorry.
I think it's not the nuclear button.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. So let's move on to Rod in Missouri on the line. Rod, welcome to the program. I'm assuming you're listening on Sirius Satellite Radio.
Yes, I am.
Hey, Rod, welcome to the program.
Love your show. Got a question. A lot of people. I've been in politics now for 30 years. We keep talking about the rich and middle class is getting pulled away and the poverty line is getting pushed out farther. Why is this always constantly being told, and where are the statistics to prove this? I'm so confused about that. And also, as an independent congressman, how you know, you sound like you're more way left on issues than you are being an independent like myself. Can you explain that, please?
Sure. Rod, the statistics that I use and that I hope any reputable public official uses, you know, comes from serious nonpartisan organizations. For example, when I mention that the real earnings for workers has fallen, that comes from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. when I mentioned that median household incomes for a typical American family are now $1,500 less than 3 years ago, that comes from the U.S. Census Bureau. In terms of my politics, I am an independent. But for me, being an independent doesn't mean that I'm somewhere in between the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, and sometimes I go with the Republicans, sometimes I go with the Democrats. The truth is, I am an independent because I think both political parties are heavily dominated by big money interests. I think the Republicans are far more in control, are far more controlled by large corporations and wealthy people, and I can tell you that almost every vote that comes onto the floor of the House is determined by campaign contributions from large corporations. And I work most closely with progressive Democrats in the House of Representatives. But my view as an independent is that neither party is fighting vigorously enough for the middle class and working families and trying to stand up to the big money interests that have so much power over the political and economic life.
So you're the independent.
That's why I'm an independent.
You're the independent for the middle class, as opposed to the middle between Democrats and Republicans. Well said. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. A consumer alert was recently reported in a leading consumer testing magazine. It warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums. I would never make a bagless vacuum because they're filthy. My 8-pound Oric XL is hypoallergenic. Try one free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200, 1-800-989-4200. You'll breathe easier knowing it's an Oric XL.
For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a 4-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I want to be just like my president. I want to make more money than I can spend. I want to build more bombs than I can send. Somewhere I can even spell the name of.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment, 24 minutes past the hour. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Linda in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Linda, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bernie. How are you, Bernie?
Hi,
and
Linda.
Tom?
Good.
I have a question for both of you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. If you listen to the national news, you hear a lot about the Senate and will not change much as far as majority rule. And but I've been talking to several people, and they're saying with me, I do not normally vote straight ticket. I don't believe in it, even though I do lean towards the Democratic Party. But I said to several people, I think I'm just so sick of the whole everything that's going on, that I'm going to vote straight party this year. And I'm hearing several people say the same thing. So my question is, if Kerry carries a state, are we going to have a change with the coattail effect, or is these national TV news correct saying that there won't be much change?
Linda, that's a good question, and I have the feeling there's nobody in the world who could give you a definitive answer. The Republicans, of course, control the Senate right now. There are a number of very closely contested elections. And on one day, one guy is up by 2 percentage points, and the next day, the other guy is up by 1 percentage point. It is hard to say. I think what the pundits, for whatever it's worth, seem to think is that the Republicans will continue to control the Senate, but there are some who disagree, and it really depends upon a number of very hard-fought races. But it is certainly possible, absolutely possible, if the chips go their way, that the Democrats could gain control of the Senate.
Yeah. Thanks, Linda, for that call.
Well, thank you for your time.
Sure. Thanks for the question. 26 minutes past the hour, 1-866-889-8894. Kevin in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, Kevin, welcome to the program.
Tom, how you doing?
Great.
Congressman, I want to, I guess, applaud your service to our country, and but I'm going to have to take you to task a little bit, or try to take you to task.
Okay,
on a
go
couple
ahead,
of
Kevin.
Your assertions. One of the things that I've been hearing ad nauseum from the other side is this. You know, the poverty number has risen. The number of people in poverty has risen. But as a percentage, the percentage of people in poverty is the same exact as it was throughout the entire 90s. The unemployment rate, and, you know, you're hearing people scream about, oh, my gosh, you know, the economy, it's horrible, it's horrible. Unemployment rate is at 5.4%, did they say today? Or it might even have ticked a little lower? Sir?
Yeah, well, trust your words. Yeah, that sounds right.
Okay, it's a 5. Just we'll just say it's 5.4. That's where it was last time. There was just economic news today.
Right.
5.4 is lower than the entire average of the 90s. And the last thing, and I know I don't have, I'm not trying to get on a soapbox here, but I'm trying to get my ideas across, and I appreciate you guys for listening. The last thing is, just say we don't outsource jobs, which is less than 0.1% of all the jobs in the country have been outsourced. And the number's probably even a little bit lower than that. If we kept the jobs here, you still hurt the middle class, middle and lower classes. Why? Because goods and services become more expensive at that point. So it's a really, if you keep the jobs here, you got to pay a guy $15 an hour. So the loaf of bread becomes $2 instead of a dollar. Doesn't hurt me as the evil, rich, white conservative. It hurts the little guy. So where do you do it? Do you give the little
guy
bread?
Stay on the phone,
$2 for the loaf of bread.
We're gonna have to take a break in about 20 seconds, too. But we can wrap this up.
Kevin, can you stay on for a little while?
Sure, I can, Congressman.
Yeah.
I appreciate
you
taking my
question.
Okay, good.
You've asked some good questions.
Yeah, and those are the conservative talking points right down the line.
Okay, we'll talk about it after the break.
Okay, we'll stick around. Our number 1-866-889-8894. 29 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, Brunch with Bernie. Our Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. In vacuums, bagless is a dirty word. In fact, they're filthy. A leading consumer testing magazine warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums. My newest hypoallergenic 8-pound Orrick XL uses triple-wall disposable filter bags. Try my new vacuum free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200. Orrick, the clean alternative to bagless vacuum.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. After hearing reports of serious workplace violations, the Brooklyn-based Fifth Avenue Committee launched an investigation of their own with shocking results. In a recently revealed report, organizers document several cases where supermarket janitors were working 14-hour shifts overnight without paid overtime.
And not only are they not getting overtime or in many cases not even minimum wage, but supermarket managers lock them in.
Artemio Guerra is organizing director for the Fifth Avenue Committee and found 36 grocery stores that were locking in their workers overnight.
It's illegal. They're violating fire code regulations. We're violating, obviously, the OSHA standards, you know, safety and health standards for the workplace. They're violating, somebody will even claim that they're violating the civil rights of these workers by falsely imprisoning them. They do it because they can, and they do it because the workers are very vulnerable and they're not going to complain.
A gay appointee has resigned in New York City over the mayor's opposition to legislation that would expand domestic partner benefits. Matt Foreman, executive director of the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, wrote to the mayor saying he had to resign out of principle. Scheduled to take effect on October 27th, the law would require companies with city contracts worth at least $100,000 to provide health, family, and bereavement benefits to domestic partners, gay or straight. The city council passed the legislation in May, and Mayor Michael Bloomberg vetoed it, but the city council overrode the veto. Last week, the Bloomberg administration sued to stop the new law. Bloomberg spokesman Jordan Borowitz said the administration filed suit because the law violates state and federal law. Picket lines of union electricians and carpenters formed near the construction site of a new Kroger supermarket in Ann Arbor, Michigan. The workers, represented by the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 252, are upset that the contractor is using out-of-town labor to get around a higher prevailing wage for local union members. They say that the Bosselman Corporation isn't paying the level of wages set by the U.S. Labor Department for the local market.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. When it comes to raising cash for candidates, big-time political fundraisers are strictly bipartisan. Both Bush and Kerry agree Iran and Iraq have supported terrorism, and both candidates say that those who harbor or finance terrorism are just as guilty. What does that mean when the 27 leading fundraisers for both Bush and Kerry do just that? 19 Bush and 9 Kerry fundraisers have been found guilty of running companies that did business with terror-supporting regimes in the past. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Penny's the hour, I've lain by my window, and thought of the people who carry the burden.
Welcome back to the True People's Radio, the Tom Hartman radio program here. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders, and Bernie, you're still live with Kevin in Philadelphia.
Good. All right, Kevin, you still there?
I'm still here, Congressman.
Good. Okay.
I can't
thanks
leave
for
I'm
hanging in there.
Listening to
let's
radio
just deal with some of the issues that you raised.
News
let's
it.
Start off with the outsourcing
issue. Get a little
issue.
Chuckle.
The truth of the matter is it is hard to document every job that's lost through outsourcing, but I think the numbers
we're
that you're
creating.
Quoting are too low. There are at least a number of studies, or at least some studies out there, which suggest that the outsourcing is a great deal higher than the Bush administration, for example, is prepared to acknowledge.
What we do know, and this is not just because of outsourcing.
Kevin, what we do know, and I don't think anyone disputes that, is that in the last 3 years alone, we have lost about 2.7 million manufacturing jobs in my small state of Vermont, very small state, one of the smallest in the country. 20% of our manufacturing jobs are gone. Is it all due to outsourcing? No. Is a lot
and
of it due to outsourcing?
Can I interrupt
yes.
you? I apologize. But how about NAFTA?
NAFTA is a disaster, absolutely.
Well, okay.
Outsourcing.
Remember the giant sucking sound from 1992?
Sorry?
Remember that giant sucking sound that Ross Perot referred to? He wasn't whistling Dixie at that point, was he?
He was right.
He was right.
Absolutely. NAFTA has been a disaster. Permanent normal trade relations with China have been a disaster. That's what outsourcing.
That's a 50-50 right across both sides of the aisle voted for NAFTA.
Oh, yeah. And Bill Clinton pushed it.
No, actually, that's not quite right, Kevin. I was there. Unless my memory is playing a bad role with me, a lot more Republicans voted for it than Democrats, although, of course, Bill Clinton led the charge.
Kevin, stay with me now.
This is not 1992. This is today. You have a president of the United States who believes in outsourcing. He thinks it is a good thing. What do you think?
I think outsourcing is a great thing. It's just progress.
Okay. If you think outsourcing is a good thing...
I know I've said that 10 times. I have an attorney.
But if you think it's a good thing, then you and I have a very serious disagreement, because I think what ends up happening, Kevin, is that American workers are going to be driven toward a race to the bottom, which means that ultimately we are forced to compete as workers against people in China who make 30 cents an hour. How do you respond to that?
Tariffs or minimum wages, which, you know, I have a master's degree in economics, and it goes against everything, you know, from an economic standpoint to say, let's put a floor on wages. It doesn't work.
You disagree with the concept of minimum wage?
Well, not particularly, but I don't agree with raising the minimum wage $7. I think anything you do to put a floor on something, it actually ends up hurting the people you're trying to help.
The minimum wage in the United Kingdom is $9 an hour, and they have less poverty. What's their economy over there?
Okay, I don't want to get into a prolonged debate because I know there are other people on the line, but you know, Kevin holds a point of view, which is essentially a conservative point of view, which says the government should withdraw from economic policies, let the free market reign. I think the end result of that will be that the wealthiest people become wealthier, poor people suffer, we're going to continue to lose good-paying jobs, and our country will increasingly be run by the wealthy and the powerful.
Yeah, Bernie,
Kevin and I have a philosophical difference on it, but thanks a lot for calling, Kevin.
Congressman, have a great day.
Thanks.
You too.
Bernie, Kevin had made the point that the unemployment rate right now is at 5.4%. This is one of the great con talking points, and that the poverty rate has been remaining relatively the same. The reality, though, is that the unemployment rate is low because we have had so many people so badly unemployed for so long that they're dropping out of the statistics. Is that not the case?
That's always been the case. That's not new. That has always been the case. When people look at unemployment now or under Clinton or anybody else, it almost always understates the reality. And that is, if you live in an area where unemployment is really high, 8, 10, 12%, and you've given up looking for work, you're not actively seeking employment, you're no longer considered unemployed because you've given up looking for work. If you are working part-time and you want a full-time job, you're considered employed. So I think that the statistics that we have always used underestimate the severity of the problem.
Okay.
And the other point, though, I think, in terms of what Kevin was saying, unemployment statistic is obviously very important. But the other statistic as to how much money people are making, how many hours they are working, is equally important. A job is, in fact, not a job. If a worker loses a good-paying manufacturing job,
that pays him or her $15, $20 an hour, and you got a job at Walmart's that are paying you $7 or $8 an hour, well, under the employment statistics, you're employed in both cases. Obviously, your quality of life is very, very different. And one of the real concerns that I have is the transformation of our economy from what used to be a manufacturing economy, good-paying jobs, good benefits, often a union, to a service industry economy, low-paying jobs, minimal benefits, often, almost always, no unions. And if we look into the future, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, that is where we are going. Yeah. More and more low-wage jobs that do not require a heck of a lot of education, that pay people low wages with minimal benefits.
And there are even national security implications to not being able to produce the stuff that we need in order to just maintain our lifestyle.
Huge security implications.
Yeah. Okay, let's go back to the phones. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, David in Grinnell, Iowa on the line. David, welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you. Hi, Tom and Congressman Sanders.
Hi, Tom.
Hey, I'm feeling real optimistic about our chances for a win. And my question concerns a possible October or November surprise. Do you think we could recover if Osama bin Laden is, quote-unquote, captured between now and then and still go on to win?
Well, I don't want to hypothesize this as
yeah,
to
that's
whether
that
will
the
happen.
Hot topic.
I know that there are a lot of people who fear an October surprise and something dramatic, and I think we all know the history of Karl Rove and various kinds of dirty tricks. I think, David, that what we really have got to focus on is the reality that there are a heck of a lot more working people and middle-class people and lower-income people than there are wealthy supporters of George Bush. And what we have got to do is just knock on as many doors as we can, make as many phone calls as we can. And if we get a very high turnout, and there are some thoughts that, in fact, that might be the case, you know, in a number of states, I'm not familiar with Iowa, but I know that in Ohio and some other states, voter registration has been going way, way up. A lot of working people are not going to be on the sidelines in this election. They're going to participate. I've been to a number of college campuses recently, and there's a lot more activism and concern among young people. So if we have a high voter turnout, I think that there is quite a good likelihood that Kerry will win this election.
Yeah, I personally feel it's going to be more of a rout than has been being indicated in the press, that Kerry is going to win by, I don't know, 5 or 7 points, because there are so many people who are not being counted.
Yeah,
there's such a groundswell, the huge turnout in the primaries, the march in New York, at the conventions. There are so many signs that point to such massive interest that.
Yeah, it may well be the case. David, thanks for the call. By the way, actforvictory.org is the Americans Coming Together website, actforvictory.org, and they've got on their website this huge thing about organizing people to help get people to the polls, and they're one of the better sites doing that.
And Tom, while we're on websites, let me mention my congressional website,
please,
which is bernie.house.gov. And we've got a lot of very good information on a lot of issues I think people would enjoy.
Great. Bernie, B-E-R-N-I-E, .house.gov. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Jared in Collegeville, Pennsylvania on the line. Jared, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Thanks. I just want to congratulate you and Bernie, Congressman Sanders, and thank him for being on the air with us every week. Today was the first time I had to call back a couple times because of the busy signal. So.
Yeah, the lines have been lit up solid. In fact, they are right
Great.
Now. It's Yep.
Just a quick comment. I saw Arianna Huffington last night on Keith Urban's Countdown talking about Cheney speaking to the reptile brain, which relates to an article you had posted on Common Dreams.
Yeah, I wrote that article 4 months ago. Arianna wrote it last week.
Yeah, I know. I thought that was interesting.
Hey, what can you do?
Thanks for the good work, guys. Yeah. That was all.
That's it?
Okay.
Thanks a lot, Jared. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Number 12, taxi driver number 12 in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hey, number 12.
Yeah, if I have time, I'd like to address two things. What do you think about keeping businesses in America by making it more attractive for them to stay here as opposed to raising tariffs, lowering taxes or anything else along that line?
Bernie?
Okay. Do you have another question as well?
Yeah, my other one's a comment about, John Kerry is goose hunting today, and I don't know if he's using a semi-automatic shotgun or not, but it's about as genuine as George Bush going to a pro-choice rally. So I wonder how, that's just a comment. And last time I talked to you about the gun issue, I nuked your argument and you changed the subject. So let's just stick to the keeping business in America by lowering taxes.
Well, I didn't change the subject. What I meant about the gun issue is I remember your call.
Yes.
And what my point was is that anyone who tells you or any publication that tells you that the United States government or John Kerry or anybody else is going to take away your guns, they're lying to you and they're scaring you. And what
they're
they want you to do
guns
is to worry
and further manufacture or importation of them. Believe me, I'm very well versed on the subject, and I could probably nuke any argument you have when it comes to it. I've even looked up your record on guns, and I know that you have no mention on the NRA site or the Brady campaign site, because it would be very wise for you to have that, you know, basically a neutral position or pro-gun position, because you're from Vermont.
Well, my view on guns, as it happens, is that everything being equal, the state should deal with the issue. In terms of the ban on certain types of assault weapons, yeah, I support that. So do most police officers and police chiefs all over America. But my point about that, I don't want to get into the whole gun issue, is I think what the Republicans have done very successfully is deflected attention away from the fact that people are working longer and longer hours for lower wages, that we're losing good-paying jobs and having people worrying that the government is going to take away their guns, which is total nonsense. But getting back to your question, you asked the question about how we...
Keeping business in America by
how do we
more keep attractive for them to stay here.
Pardon me?
He was just repeating his question about...
Yeah, and the question is, do we make it a more attractive climate? By that, what folks usually mean is, do we provide more subsidies? Do we lower taxes for corporations? Well, the answer is, if we can provide help to businesses, the businesses that we should be helping are those businesses that want to grow decent-paying jobs in America. And what we have seen in recent years is that the largest corporations have been very clear. They do not want to, by and large, reinvest in America. So if you're looking at the number of workers that large corporations like General Electric and many of them others have in America, those numbers have gone down, down, and down, because they are, in fact, creating new jobs, but those jobs are being created in China and in other countries. Do I think we should provide one nickel in taxpayer subsidy for those companies? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Second of all, I do believe that the way our country became economically strong was through a fair trade policy, which did say that not anybody could bring their products back into this country, that it does not make sense for the GEs of the world to be able to throw American workers out on the street, go to China, and then bring their product back into this country tariff-free. I think that is a stupid idea, which has really hurt the middle class. So I do support a fair trade policy. Thirdly, instead of giving billions of dollars in subsidies and tax breaks to large multinationals, I think we should be working with small and medium-sized companies who want to grow jobs in the United States, and that's something that I have been focusing on.
Okay, great. Margaret in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Margaret, welcome to the program.
Hi. Hey, I wanted to compliment Bernie Sanders because he sounds, I'm glad he's an independent, and he sounds like a good old-fashioned congressman used to be. And the things that he's saying is so true, and I hope that people listen to him. But one of the things I called about, or I guess two things. One thing that I can't understand is about the outsourcing, and I guess that started with NAFTA. But what if the people who don't have jobs in anything go out and buy, and not buy anything that's made in another country, and say, I want something but made in USA?
Well, Margaret,
the other thing that upsets me, and maybe Bernie can answer it, is that I read in the paper today where the CIA did another report on 9/11, and that the president, as usual, doesn't want to release it until after the election, and it names names and things of that sort. And I can't understand how all these people are wanting to vote for Bush when he's brought so much dissension in this country. And I feel like he is maybe Hitler or someone like that taking over our country and giving it, as you say, to the rich people who are getting richer, and we who are working are getting poorer, and we're becoming slaves to the government.
Okay, well, Margaret said a whole lot. Margaret, let me answer you very briefly. Number one, I think it is a good idea that when people walk into stores, and if you look at labels and you're finding it harder and harder to discover products manufactured in the United States, to go up to the store manager and say, hey, you know, I would like to have a choice. I would like to be able to make products, purchase products manufactured in the United States. And I think that might trickle up to the CEOs. There are companies who, in fact, very proudly advertise that their products are made in the United States, and I think that gives them a real advantage. In terms of the president not being willing to release studies and information, I think the evidence is that this is the most secretive government administration that we probably have ever had. They just do not release a lot of information, and they're not terribly open with the American people.
Why don't the people understand that?
Well, hopefully, Margaret, the people will understand that. But your first point, that, you know, ordinary people are working so hard, and in many ways they're falling further and further behind, is the most important reality facing America. And it's hard for me to understand, Margaret, how somebody in that position, somebody who's working 50 or 60 hours a week, somebody who can't afford prescription drugs, somebody who is in danger of losing his or her overtime, can't afford to send their kids to college, somebody like that could vote for George Bush. And I hope people come to their senses and think otherwise.
Amen. Thank you, Margaret, for that call. Thank you, Bernie. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where we get our talking points from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
We the people now face a fundamental choice. Take back our government or do nothing and become the victims of tyranny and empire.
That is the message in a revealing new book by Tom Hartman, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People takes a hard look at America's past, present, and future. You'll find out that the Patriot Act is not unique. In 1798, President John Adams pushed the Alien and Sedition Act through a Federalist Congress, enabling him to have his unpatriotic critics arrested and imprisoned, putting numerous opposition newspapers out of business. While a bit more subtle, Hartman says, this administration is likewise attempting to suppress any criticism, to eradicate any opposition. Progressive talk show host Janine Garofalo says, read this book for a jolt of illumination. We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Yeah. acid rain has fallen from the headlines, but an ecologist says we're a long way from solving the problem. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. In 1963, Gene Likens found that samples of rainwater he collected in the White Mountains of New Hampshire were very acidic. 9 years later, Likens, now director of the Institute of Ecosystem Studies in New York, published the first paper on acid rain. The issue became a leading environmental cause, and the 1990 amendments to the Federal Clean Air Act reduced emissions of sulfur dioxide, the main pollutant in acid rain. But Likens says rain is still up to 10 times more acidic than it should be in parts of the Northeast. And he says soil minerals like calcium and magnesium, which can neutralize acid, have been used up.
Having leached out large amounts of calcium and magnesium have made these soils now even more sensitive to continuing inputs of acid rain than they were before. It's sort of like using Tums or Rolaids for an acid stomach. And when the Tom and Rolaid is used up, then your stomach may burn.
Likens says the main source of the acid is changing. Coal-fired power plants emit most of the sulfur, but cars and trucks are putting more nitrogen oxides into the air.
The 1990 amendments to the Clean Air Act focused almost entirely on reducing sulfur emissions to the atmosphere. Well, that's good. That's great. But we also have increasing amounts of nitrogen oxides emitted to the atmosphere. And I predict from my work that by about 2012, that nitric acid is going to be the dominant acid in precipitation where it has been for at least 50 years, sulfuric acid.
Likens says those higher inputs of nitrogen could present yet another set of problems for ecosystems already harmed by acid rain. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you with Congressman Bernie Sanders. Bernie, we've got callers in New Mexico, Florida, and Alabama. We've got 3 minutes, so let's try and do these quick.
Okay,
Michael in Santa Fe, you're on the line.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Bernie,
what's up?
A wonderful opportunity. And Tom, first-time listener, long-time heard about the show.
Oh, great. Question, Michael.
Bernie, how did we get into the situation where men like my fellow Philadelphian has this schizophrenia about this blind adherence to economic principles that he supports principally and yet recognizes the negative effects? We grew up in a world where capitalism unbridled led to robber barons, wealthy families mirroring Central America and
right.
have-nots.
All right, Michael, let me jump in because we don't have a lot of time.
Okay,
excuse
quick.
Me, let me
and
jump in.
How do we get to a position
my
where the middle class so embraces blindly the principles of capitalism?
We got it, Michael. Thank you.
Okay. Michael, what I think the answer is that there are not, among other things, you have a corporately controlled media which does not present alternative points of view. I think if you had shows like Tom Hartman, all over this country, and people like Tom on television presenting an alternative vision, I think a lot of folks would be thinking differently, but they don't see or hear that vision, and that's one of the problems.
Okay. Paul in Florida, you're on the air.
Yes, and Bernie, I'd elaborate on that. If you took away that idiot's tenure in Philadelphia and his butt was out on the street, he'd be holding carry signs.
That's right.
No.
That is exactly right.
Okay.
And I have another question.
Paul, I can tell you that people told me, you know, Bernie, I used to disagree with you. Then I lost my job. I see the world in a new light. That's right.
Yeah.
Thank exactly.
Thanks.
Another thing, Bush and his rallies, this goes to all the supposed Christians out there that follow Christ's teachings. Christ never kept his dissenters out of his rallies. He always welcomed everybody. Bush cannot say he's following the teachings of Christ and God talks to him when he keeps out his dissenters. And furthermore, Reverend Moon says that he's Christ, God reincarnated. Is that the God that Bush is talking about that tells him what to do?
He's the one who runs the Washington Times, so it must be. Jim in Alabama, you're on the air, unless you wanted to, Bernie, you wanted to make a comment.
No, that's
okay. Jim?
Hello. Hello, Congressman Sanders.
Hey,
I just had a quick question.
We got about 20 seconds here.
Okay, the flu vaccine shortage, who is the Surgeon General and where is he or she in this, and why did they not see this coming?
Okay.
Thank you.
Can't
quickly.
Answer it in 20 seconds, but they have not done a good job. This could have been prevented.
Yeah, it seems like if we just said, you know, the government is going to guarantee the purchase of the flu vaccine, if all of it doesn't get bought, then you'd have manufacturers falling over each other.
The interesting point, Tom, is they're now looking at Europe and Canada when they used to tell us how terrible it was to re-import medicine from those countries.
Isn't that ironic? Bush is going to import drugs from Canada now. It's amazing. He'll do it.
2 weeks before an election, it's a good idea.
Yeah. Thanks, Bernie. Thanks for being with us.
Okay, Tom.
We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. After hearing reports of serious workplace violations, the Brooklyn-based Fifth Avenue Committee launched an investigation of their own with shocking results. In a recently revealed report, organizers document several cases where supermarket janitors were working 14-hour shifts overnight without paid overtime.
And not only are they not getting overtime or in many cases not even minimum wage, but supermarket managers lock them in.
Artemio Guerra is organizing director for the Fifth Avenue Committee and found 36 grocery stores that were locking in their workers overnight.
It's illegal. They're violating fire code regulations. We're violating, obviously, the OSHA standards, you know, safety and health standards for the workplace. They're violating, somebody will even claim that they're violating the civil rights of these workers by falsely imprisoning them. They do it because they can, and they do it because the workers are very vulnerable and they're not going to complain.
A gay appointee has resigned in New York City over the mayor's opposition to legislation that would expand domestic partner benefits. Matt Foreman, executive director of the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, wrote to the mayor saying he had to resign out of principle. Scheduled to take effect on October 27th, the law would require companies with city contracts worth at least $100,000 to provide health, family, and bereavement benefits to domestic partners, gay or straight. The city council passed the legislation in May, and Mayor Michael Bloomberg vetoed it, but the city council overrode the veto. Last week, the Bloomberg administration sued to stop the new law. Bloomberg spokesman Jordan Borowitz said the administration filed suit because the law violates state and federal law. Picket lines of union electricians and carpenters formed near the construction site of a new Kroger supermarket in Ann Arbor, Michigan. The workers, represented by the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 252, are upset that the contractor is using out-of-town labor to get around a higher prevailing wage for local union members. They say that the Bosselman Corporation isn't paying the level of wages set by the U.S. Labor Department for the local market.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. When it comes to raising cash for candidates, big-time political fundraisers are strictly bipartisan. Both Bush and Kerry agree Iran and Iraq Iraq have supported terrorism, and both candidates say that those who harbor or finance terrorism are just as guilty. What does that mean when the 27 leading fundraisers for both Bush and Kerry do just that? 19 Bush and 9 Kerry fundraisers have been found guilty of running companies that did business with terror-supporting regimes in the past. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
So, Jasper, how was your year?
Excellent. This administration gives the best returns ever.
Do tell.
Well, the money I paid to a lobbying firm in Washington brought in over $50 million in overseas contracts.
Oh, yes, lobbying pays.
Are you still into commodities, Max?
No, I'm funding politicians. My campaign contributions got me over $100 million worth of regulation waivers.
Well done, Max.
Today's wisest investments are in politics. Where are you throwing your money?
Easily paid for by billionairesforbush.com.
Walmart, we're told, is the epitome of free enterprise in America. Work hard, be innovative, achieve efficiencies, and your company will be rewarded with riches. Oh yes, one more thing. Be sure to load up on government subsidies along the way. Good Jobs First, a research center that studies the doling out of public money to corporations, reports that the sprawling of Walmart's empire has been fueled by the steady injection of more than $1 billion from the pockets of us taxpayers, including taxes paid by local businesses that subsequently have been squeezed out of existence by Walmart's subsidized muscle. Digging into scattered, often hidden records of state and local governments, the center found 244 cases of giveaways, including construction grants, special tax breaks, and job training money. The average payout to a Walmart store was $2.8 million. Imagine being an independent pharmacy, hardware store, grocery, or other shop and having to compete with a multi-billion dollar giant that is then handed an extra $2.8 million tax-paid advantage over you. The actual subsidy is much larger, for the center was able to look at only a portion of the 2,900 Walmart stores. Also, the report covers only the direct development subsidies, not counting the huge wage subsidy it gets. Walmart pays at a poverty level and provides no health coverage for a majority of its workers, instead counting on food stamps, emergency rooms, and other publicly financed services to underwrite its workforce. Oh, tut-tut, sniffed a Walmart PR flack. Don't you know that in 10 years the company has collected more than $52 billion in sales taxes that help finance local governments? Well, tut-tut right back. That's not Walmart's money. So excuse us if we don't roll over in gratitude. This is Jim Hightower saying, to learn more and to help push for economic development policies that work for local folks, call Good Jobs First, 202-626-3780.
I have these nightmares. This taco, not just an ordinary taco, but this big evil taco is haunting me.
Guacamole.
You see, I was exposed to credit cards in college, and I wasn't the most responsible person back then.
Go, go, go!
I mean, I heard the words credit card and thought, hey, hey, free money! Plane ticket to spring break? Credit card. New skis? Credit card. 135 taco dinners? Bam! Credit card. But hey, it's not too late to do something about your credit. Get ScorePower from Equifax.com. ScorePower gives you your credit report, credit score, and it puts you on the road toward the credit you deserve for just $14.95. So, check out Equifax.com today and get that taco you ate 7 years ago out of your life.
Get ScorePower at Equifax.com or 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Adios, taco.
Get the power. Score power at Equifax.com.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. What's going on in Florida? The election is already underway, and strange stuff going on. In the midst of that, there's not only an election for, you know, President of the United States and that sort of thing, but also elections for the Supervisor of Elections. Rob McKenna is the candidate for the Supervisor of Elections post in Hillsborough County, Florida. That's the county in which the city of Tampa is located. And Rob is with us today. Hey, Rob, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Tom. I really appreciate you having me on.
I'm pleased to have you here. You are a Democratic candidate running against essentially a Republican appointee.
That's correct.
How did this political hack get appointed by Jeb Bush?
Well, what happened here in Hillsborough County was our previous supervisor of election was a lady named Pam Ioria, who actually did an excellent job supervising our elections for about 6.5 years. Then what happened, she actually did such a great job that she wound up resigning from the job running for mayor of the city of Tampa, and she subsequently won it and is now the mayor of the city of Tampa. And to fill out the rest of her term, our friend Governor Jeb appointed this character to fill out the last 2 years. He is actually a former state legislator, and then he actually resigned his seat under mysterious circumstances and then spent a couple of years in another government appointment, and now has been appointed to fill out this job, in which he's had some serious problems of late, I'm afraid.
For example?
Well, where do I begin? back in March, we had a primary here where we had, our primary was after things had basically been decided already, so we didn't have very good turnout. But what we did have was we had 255 more people who went into the polls to vote than we counted votes at the end of the day. Now, some of that's normal, but if you compare that to other counties, our undervote rate is what that's called, was actually 5.5 times higher than comparable counties who don't use the same touchscreen systems that we have.
550% higher.
Yes, exactly.
Now, does the supervisor...
Based on statistically, we probably should have seen about 50, and instead we saw more than 250.
We're talking to Rob McKenna. He's the Democratic candidate for supervisor of elections in Hillsborough County, Florida. Rob, does the supervisor of elections have access to the database on the voting machines that we saw, many of us saw, Howard Dean and Bev Harris hack into on Tina Brown's program in 90 seconds?
Yes, he does, but I would say that probably I know they've trained a chimp to be able to do that. But
yeah, they did.
I don't think that the fellow that I'm facing actually could. that's kind of our security measure. I don't think he's confident.
It's really
do that.
I can tell you how to do it on the air in 30 seconds. I mean, it's really.
I know.
Really,
no, it's ridiculous how easy it would be. And unfortunately, there's some security measures that they really have not put in place here that Tampa Tribune uncovered in a report a couple of weeks ago, but they still have not gone and implemented those procedures.
Yeah.
Well, so that's one of the first things I got to do when I get in there is make sure that we can preserve the security of our voting system.
Yeah, and have a paper trail, I understand, as part of your platform.
Absolutely. That's something that's absolute necessity. I mean, I'm a computer programmer for a living. And all day long, I make my money finding data that can't get lost that does, fixing programs that can't break that do. And I know for a fact that you have to have some kind of physical record of any kind of important transaction. I mean, you wouldn't buy a house or buy a car or buy anything else important without some kind of paper record of what you do. So why should our votes be something that's completely virtual and that's something that, if there's some kind of a glitch or some kind of a problem or some sort of devious attack, completely lost or erased with absolutely no trace. It just it boggles the mind.
Yeah, it's really strange too that Diebold, the company that says that they can't put or it would be too difficult or too expensive or whatever to put paper printers on voting machines, makes ATM machines that are constantly tossing receipts at me that frankly I don't want.
it's funny. I got a big start recently when I pulled up to an ATM and to get out some money, and I realized it was actually a Diebold made ATM.
Yeah.
The company actually we have here in Hillsborough County is not Diebold. It's a company named Sequoia, which is one of the big three manufacturers of touchscreen.
Yeah.
They actually do already make a printer that would fit on the machines that we already have here in Hillsborough County. In fact, out in Nevada, about a month ago, they actually had the first election in the United States to actually have a voter verifiable paper trail as part of the election procedure. I went out there and actually observed it, and it went as smooth as silk. I mean, one of the main objections that people would like to throw up is, the paper, the printers will jam, it'll be a big fat mess. And they did have a paper jam.
Yeah.
Out of over 100,000 votes cast, they had one paper jam. So I think that's not really a real objection. It's just a kind of a made-up point to try and avoid having to spend the money, quite frankly, to fix what we just bought a couple of years ago.
Yeah. We're talking with Rob McKenna, the Democratic candidate for Supervisor of Elections in Hillsborough County. We've got another 6 or 7 minutes in the segment. If anybody has a question for Rob, our number 1-866-889-8894. Rob, what do you see going on in Florida as a whole? We're hearing just, you know, here out, I'm up here in the People's Republic of Vermont, but I think all across the country, we're just hearing these freaky stories about Jeb is still, there are still people, still African Americans who were kicked off the rolls before the 2000 vote. You know, the vote fraud that went on, this huge systemic vote fraud that went on in 2000 in Florida, we never would have even known about it if the election hadn't been so close. So they thought they were going to get away with it, nobody would ever find out. And B, a lot of it is still in place. And C, they're going to do it again. I mean, is this really, what's going on down there?
No, you're not off base at all, I'm afraid. But the good thing, the bright side of all this is, yeah, there is all sorts of problems, and there are people trying to do all sorts of, you know, quite frankly, nefarious things. But, you know, we are much more on the case this time. And last time we kind of found out about it, you know, it was a little bit too late.
Yeah.
This time, you know, the party, the Kerry campaign, some independent groups like the Florida Consumer Action Network, they are making very strong attempts to try and stay on top of the problems and you know, kind of fix them before they become problems on Election Day. For instance, one of the great unreported stories of the 2000 election was in Duval County, where 27,000 votes, primarily African-American votes, were thrown out. And the reason that was never brought up is because they told the Gore campaign, when they were, you know, trying to figure out where they wanted to contest the results, that they'd only thrown out 300 ballots. But in fact, it was 27,000.
Wow.
So pretty much the same people, quite frankly, are still in charge up there, although actually the supervisor of elections in that county resigned on Monday. So you know, there's turmoil up there. One of the big things that they are trying to do this time was they had only opened one early voting location, which was right downtown, difficult to access for the minority community. And they've basically been sued, and there's all sorts of efforts to make them comply, and they are, in fact, going to have to comply, and they are going to open some more early voting sites. They're going to be more convenient. So that's just an example of how we are much more on the case this time than we were last time, and hopefully anything that people try and do, we will catch, although there's so much to catch. You know, some of it's probably going to get through, and you're absolutely right. Some of the people in 2000 still off the rolls.
Yeah.
You know, they tried to do the same thing this year. There was another voter purge list that was sent around. But the media did actually, for once, did a good job of, you know, they had to sue the Secretary of State to get her to release that list. And as soon as they did, they found thousands of mistakes with it, and they had to throw the whole thing out.
Yeah. Now the Sarasota Herald Tribune says that they're back at it, or unless I'm misinterpreting this article in the Orlando Sentinel yesterday.
Yeah, some counties are still doing it. And you know, it's kind of a tough situation for the supervisors because Florida law, stupidly, quite frankly, does require us to remove from the voting rolls anybody who is a convicted felon. And so, you know, the supervisors are trying to do their job. But, of course, it's at the same time, people are getting their rights back, but there's no real way for you to go back and find out who has their rights restored. It's a huge mess. And, quite frankly, in the past and still going forward today, there's an attitude of guilty until found innocent.
Right.
Whereas if we have some reason to throw people off the rolls down here, the supervisor tends to just do that, and then you have to prove, no, I have my rights back, which is a long process. And quite frankly, if it happens now, you're not going to get your rights back before November the 2nd. So yeah, you're going to be out of luck.
Well, let's take a call here. Kate in Arcata, Florida, is on the line. Hey, Kate, welcome to the program.
Hi, Arcata, California.
Oh, California. I'm sorry.
Excuse me. That's okay. I was listening to somebody named Snow, a right-wing radio host. I've never heard him before, but I heard him the day before yesterday. And the irony is that they were sounding just like you guys, only they were saying how the Democrats are doing their usual cheating at the polls. And so everybody who's listening to
it's Mayor Daley all over again, right?
Exactly. So they're just, you know, the people who are listening to them and agreeing them, they sounded just as sincere as you guys do.
Well, that's great. I mean, it's great that, see, this is the thing. I mean, in the House of Representatives, Congressman Rush Holt, the Democrat from New Jersey, introduced a piece of legislation a year and a half ago that would have required a paper trail, a voter verifiable paper trail on all electronic voting machines. And the Republicans have been keeping this thing bottled up. Tom DeLay and Denny Hastert have prevented this thing from coming to the floor of the House for a vote, even though Rush Holt has more co-sponsors for the bill now than would be necessary to pass it. And the Republicans have been just fighting this tooth and nail. And I keep saying, you know, why are they doing this? Don't they realize someday the Democrats will be in charge? And they're not going to, you know, I mean, it's nuts.
Well, that's true. What really alarms me about it, though, is that no matter which way the election goes, there's going to be huge uproar, and it's going to be about voter fraud. And I have a feeling it's not going to be a pretty sight.
Yeah. Yeah. What are your thoughts on that, Rob? Thanks, Kate, for the call.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Pete. I think that, well, two things. First of all, you know, it is, and I this is why I think I'm going to win my election here locally, is concern about voter fraud.
Because you know how to run a computer.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, there's that.
Excuse me, I'm sorry, it's a bad joke.
I mean, I talk to people all the time from both sides of the aisle who say, oh, yeah, you know, I'm supporting you because I want to make sure that my vote counts. Here in Hillsborough County, we're pretty much a 50-50 county. In fact, whoever wins Hillsborough County is almost certainly going to become president, which is kind of a frightening responsibility for us.
Hmm.
But people want to make sure that their vote counts, and they don't care if it's Democrats or Republicans. People want to make sure that their, you know, their vote is not eventually going to get lost. And, you know, it's kind of interesting because in different parts of the country, it's different people who are on different sides of this issue. For instance, I just mentioned a few minutes ago about Nevada, how they've got the paper trail already. That was actually spearheaded by Republicans.
Yeah.
The Secretary of State, who was instrumental in getting that done, is actually a Republican.
Yeah.
Here in Florida, Republicans are totally against it because of the way, unfortunately, the different counties that bought the touchscreens are primarily Democratic, so who cares if their votes get lost?
Mm.
Whereas the counties that have the reliable systems tend to be Republicans. So,
really?
You know, they're fine.
You mean the Republican counties in Florida are still using punch cards and the Democratic counties have the electronic machines?
No, the Republican-leaning counties have actually bought the other system, which is like an optical scan system where you fill in an arrow or you bubble in a bubble.
Right.
And that's actually the most reliable.
Where there's a paper trail. There's a paper trail. That's amazing. I had no idea.
Accurate.
I had no idea.
In 2001, the governors...
Rob, I'm sorry. We're out of time here, but... We'll get you back one of these days.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, great to have you on. Rob McKenna, he's a Democratic candidate for Supervisor of Elections, Hillsborough County, Florida. That's the Tampa area. And, Rob, thanks again for being with us. 20 minutes after the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir!
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Bush administration can't seem to get it right when it comes to creating jobs. In the U.S., there's a net loss of jobs. In Iraq, the Bush administration blames a clerical error for overstating the number of Iraqi jobs in projects funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development. The agency first said more than 88,000 were working in its projects as of September 15th, but that has changed to just under 46,000 blamed on a clerical error.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Has war broken out inside the Republican Party? This is an interesting question, I think. Here we have Pat Robertson. The guy who sold his religious broadcasting network some years ago for $1 billion. Pat Robertson, probably one of the most wealthy and powerful men in the Republican Party, bar none. I mean, the power and money and access to media, owning the media with 700 Club and all that this guy has, that Pat Robertson has, and his ability to swing five million voters, essentially. You know, he's the Father Coughlin of the day. His ability to swing a few million voters just, you know, with a few words has had Republicans quaking in their boots for a long, long time. And here now, Pat Robertson comes out and says that God told him, or he says the Lord told him, he was probably referring to Jesus, told him, I mean, he specifically said that, told him, that if George Bush invaded Iraq, it was going to be messy and there were going to be a lot of casualties. And he, you know, feeling that this was a sincere message from Jesus that he had to convey to George. Now, George, of course, having told the Mennonites, I believe, recently, that God speaks through him. Also believes he has a direct line to the divine. But nonetheless, Pat Robertson went trotting off to the White House, and the White House has confirmed the meeting and sat George down and said, George, if you invade, this was all before the invasion of Iraq back, a year ago last March, and sits George down and says, George, if you invade Iraq, the Lord has told me it's going to be a messy and there are going to be a lot of casualties. And Pat Robertson says, or said on national television, either yesterday or the day before. And George, he says, gave him a big smile or, you know, acted very confident and said, there won't be any casualties. Now, you know, we did go into Bosnia with a military force, with a very large military force, and had no casualties. We went into Kosovo, no casualties. Following the collapse of the Nazis after World War II, after, you know, at the end of the war, from that day to this day, there have been no casualties. In Japan, after following the end of, you know, the collapse of the Japanese Empire, when the occupation forces went in, my father was one of them. No casualties. And so, you know, George W. figured he had it figured out, or maybe somebody else told him, don't worry. So anyhow, what? Number one, here's a, this raises a whole bunch of interesting questions. The first is, why did Pat Robertson say this on national television? Why did he say something that he knew, this guy's no dummy, he knew would be embarrassing and perhaps destructive to George W. Bush? Was he doing this to demonstrate his power? Was this his way of saying, watch out, George, you get reelected and you better be careful because I got the power? Was he saying that? Was he saying, George, don't even think about taking this party back toward the center? You got Rudy Giuliani and Arnold Schwarzenegger and all these do-gooders who believe in welfare programs and minimum wages and keeping jobs here in America and civil unions and gay rights, and you don't even think about affiliating yourself with those guys. Was it his way of trying to take back the Republican Party? Or does Pat Robertson think that George W. Bush has made a deal with the devil, that he's gone to the dark side, that he's made some horrible error that needs to be corrected? A couple of interesting websites on this, too. I'd like to know your thoughts on this. Our number, 1-866-889-8894. What's going on here inside the Republican Party? Is it about to self-destruct? If George W. is elected, will it mean the end of the Republican Party? I think it's possible. 29 minutes past the hour.
A must-read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. After hearing reports of serious workplace violations, the Brooklyn-based Fifth Avenue Committee launched an investigation of their own with shocking results. In a recently revealed report, organizers document several cases where supermarket janitors were working 14-hour shifts overnight without paid overtime.
And not only are they not getting overtime or, in many cases, not even minimum wage, but supermarket managers lock them in.
Artemio Guerra is organizing director for the Fifth Avenue Committee and found 36 grocery stores that were locking in their workers overnight.
It's illegal. They're violating fire code regulations. We're violating, obviously, the OSHA standards, you know, safety and health standards for the workplace. They're violating, somebody will even claim that they're violating the civil rights of these workers by falsely imprisoning them. They do it because they can, and they do it because the workers are very vulnerable and they're not going to complain.
A gay appointee has resigned in New York City over the mayor's opposition to legislation that would expand domestic partner benefits. Matt Foreman, executive director of the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, wrote to the mayor saying he had to resign out of principle. Scheduled to take effect on October 27th, the law would require companies with city contracts worth at least $100,000 to provide health, family, and bereavement benefits to domestic partners, gay or straight. The city council passed the legislation in May, and Mayor Michael Bloomberg vetoed it, but the city council overrode the veto. Last week, the Bloomberg administration sued to stop the new law. Bloomberg spokesman Jordan Borowitz said the administration filed suit because the law violates state and federal law. Picket lines of union electricians and carpenters formed near the construction site of a new Kroger supermarket in Ann Arbor, Michigan. The workers, represented by the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 252, are upset that the contractor is using out-of-town labor to get around a higher prevailing wage for local union members. They say that the Bosselman Corporation isn't paying the level of wages set by the U.S. Labor Department for the local market.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. When it comes to raising cash for candidates, big-time political fundraisers are strictly bipartisan. Both Bush and Kerry agree Iran and Iraq have supported terrorism, and both candidates say that those who harbor or finance terrorism are just as guilty. What does that mean when the 27 leading fundraisers for both Bush and Kerry do just that? 19 Bush and 9 Kerry fundraisers have been found guilty of running companies that did business with terror-supporting regimes in the past. You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Yes. 27 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Christian Coalition founder and billionaire and one of the most powerful, wealthy, well-connected men in the, white guys in the Republican Party, Pat Robertson, saying Jesus told him personally that there would be casualties in Iraq. And he went and reported this dutifully to George Bush, who smiled and said, no way, not going to happen, no casualties, nothing to worry about. Why? What's going on? Why is he talking about this now? By coincidence, we have Ellen Ratner on the line from Talk Radio News Service. Hey, Ellen, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much.
I just brought this issue up. I'm wondering if Robertson is doing this because he's trying to demonstrate his power, if he's trying to tell Bush, don't even think about going with Giuliani and Arnold and all those other liberals that are trying to infiltrate the Republican Party, if there's a war going on in the Republican Party, if he thinks Bush has made a deal with the devil. There's these interesting websites. BushIsLord.com is one, and the other one is BushIsAntichrist.com. Is it a nice guy or the devil's spawn? And these two kind of dueling websites, BushIsLord.com and BushIsAntichrist.com, and it's like in the Republican Party now, there's like this war breaking out about whether George Bush is channeling Jesus or Satan, and It's weird stuff, Ellen. Any buzz about this in Washington, D.C.? I mean, is this Pat Robertson?
No, I mean, people just really honestly just think that that's wacko web stuff and don't really pay much attention.
But, I mean, Pat Robertson just stepped into the middle of it.
Well, Pat Robertson did just step into this. And I don't think that he – I honestly think there's something about Bush that scares him. And there has been, it's interesting, our military correspondent, Shalene Espinoza, flies with a lot of former military pilots, many of whom are from evangelical-type states and many of whom are evangelicals, God and country kind.
Right.
And she says that when she flies with them, a lot of them feel that the evangelical movement is uncomfortable with the war because of what they were told about it, because they don't feel they were told the truth about it, and because also of the number of innocent Iraqis getting killed.
Yeah.
And that there is a significant amount of evangelicals, maybe not enough to skew an election, that have some real questions about this.
There's also, and I realize this is pushing the edge, but there's also a deep anti-Semitic streak within the extreme right in the Christian community. It shows up in two ways. Some of it is just naked, open anti-Semitism, and the other side of it, sort of the friendly face of it, is the embracing Israel with the ultimate goal of converting all Jews to Christianity so that Jesus can reappear. And there are a lot of evangelicals who are
at least, you know, what I'm seeing on some of these weblogs and things, who are pretty flipped out about the fact that the architects of this war, by and large, were the neocons, who, by and large, were Jewish. And so then this anti-Semitism within the Christian community, the right-wing Christian community, is asserting itself. And it all gets very, very, frankly, bizarre. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, there's two thoughts about the Christian community. Are they anti-Semitic, or are they believing in Israel because of essentially the Book of Revelations?
Right.
Or both. Right. And that's, or the belief that Jews are as close to them in terms of theology and have the option, perhaps, or they have the ability to convert them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's the question.
Yeah. I see a religious war breaking out inside the Republican Party, and I'm wondering if Pat Robertson might be telling George Bush, stay away from those neocons, you know, the Wolfowitz, Pearl, those guys. There was this piece that Cal Thomas wrote just a few weeks ago, nationally syndicated, saying that if you use the word neocon, you're being anti-Semitic because most of the neocons are Jewish and nobody should mention that. And when you've got Republicans saying this, it's like, whoa, what's going on inside this party?
Well, it will be interesting. If Bush loses, obviously there's going to be an entire reinventing of the Republican Party. Even though if he wins, here you have Christy Todd Whitman, who is now going around the country supporting Bush, but has a book coming out in January called It's My Party Too.
Hmm.
You have people who want to win to be president,
yeah.
who, such as perhaps Giuliani, perhaps Governor Pataki.
Chuck Hagel, for sure.
Are huge moderates.
Yeah, yeah. In other words, the Republican, or the Rockefeller Republicans, are beginning to reassert themselves.
That's for sure, because I think they see what's happening and they're really worried.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. Okay, quick news report from Washington, D.C.
Okay, quick news report. Bush signed his youth suicide prevention bill. It was named after Senator Gordon Smith. His 21-year-old son committed suicide. Britain has now agreed for a U.S. request for more troops in Baghdad. Some people see that as kind of risky with Prime Minister Tony Blair. The group of senators...
Ellen, may I interrupt you there? Did you see the headline in the Telegraph yesterday that was talking about this, the Telegraph being one of the four major papers in the UK, that the headline said, Britain debating sending troops as, U.S. soldiers mutiny, British debate sending troops to fill the gap, or something to that effect. I mean, that's how it was being spun in the UK. Had you seen that?
Very interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it was right there in the Telegraph, you know, the U.S. troops mutiny, shall we send soldiers to fill the void? So.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. The other thing that's cooking around here is the issue of the 9/11.
The CIA report?
The 9/11 legislation. And basically, some Republicans are trying to get stricter security measures in the legislation. Jane Harman and some others are saying, hey, wait a second, this stuff about sending people who have been tortured in third countries because we don't want to do it and we're not sending them back home is against the United Nations provisions that we have signed, et cetera.
Yeah. Yeah, and then there's the CIA report that apparently names names of who in this administration, in the Bush administration, and in the CIA had some culpability, at least by virtue of incompetence, in allowing 9/11 to happen. And this is a report that was requested by Congress 2 years ago, and apparently the CIA is finished with it, and the Bush administration will not allow it to be released until after the election. Is that picking up some buzz there? It was in the front page of our local paper here in Vermont today.
Yeah, it's picking up a little buzz.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's definitely picking up some
Do you think
buzz.
There's any chance that report's going to see the light of day or get leaked?
I think that as soon as it really gets to Congress, it will get leaked. That's how these things go. Yeah. That's why they don't want it to Congress before the election.
Yeah, well, Congress is not in session until after the election.
Right, and I have to say, there's some buzz in Washington, but remember, most of Washington's on the campaign trail.
Yeah, Yeah, interesting. Okay, Ellen, thanks for the update and the news.
Talk to you tomorrow.
It's always great, you know, sharing opinions and thoughts and ideas and speculations with you. Yeah, well, I'll see you tomorrow in Washington, D.C., right?
You got it.
Okay, see you there then.
Thanks. Oh, you're going to come.
Yeah, I'm going to be I'm going to be one of those liberals.
I know. Yeah. I'm going to be one of the questioners.
Oh, cool. Well,
okay.
We'll have
fun. See you tomorrow.
Yeah, see you then. It's 17 minutes before the hour, 18 minutes before the hour, the Tom Hartman program here with you. I'm not going to spend too much more time on this, but I just, I have to alert you to these websites. This is just remarkable. BushIsLord.com. Welcome to Bush is Lord. Our purpose is to bring you, well, the page is cut off here, but to support the claim that George W. Bush is indeed our spiritual lighthouse and embodied salvation. That's the goal of this website. The latest witness to our leader's greatness, a news update. They're referring to George W. Bush as their savior. BushIsLord.com. I'll let you decide if it's a spoof site or not. And then, of course, Nice Guy or the Devil's Spawn, BushIsAntichrist.com. The flip side of this guy says, I submit to you that George Walker Bush is the Antichrist, and I have accumulated plenty of proof. And he actually has. I mean, you know, that his number is 666 and all this stuff, and it just goes on and on and on. And then, of course, this prayer, I've had now four people forward this thing to me. It's flying around the Internet. The new 23rd Psalm, the 2004 Psalm, George Bush is my shepherd, I shall be in want. He maketh me to lie down on park benches. He leadeth me beside still factories. He restoreth my doubts about the Republican Party. He leadeth me into the ways of unemployment for his cronies' sake. Yea, though no weapons of mass destruction have been found, he maketh me continue to fear evil. His tax cuts for the rich and his deficit spending discomfort me. He anointeth me with never-ending debt. Verily my days of savings and assets are kaput. Surely poverty and hard living shall follow me all the days of his administration, and my jobless child shall dwell in my basement forever. I think that's great. Your thoughts. Donna in New Mexico. Is that Trucha, New Mexico, Donna?
Trucha.
Hey, welcome to the program.
Trout.
Oh, interesting. In Spanish.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I learn something
okay,
every day.
About Pat Robertson.
Yes.
I have before me at this moment an article from Haaretz Daily out of Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
And Pat Robertson's threat to George Bush to form a third party, a third political party, in order to guarantee that the fundamentalist Christians fulfill their prophecy. And it's astonishing. It's dated October 4th. I read it a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy is basically threatening Bush, saying that you're not doing enough for us with regard to fulfilling this prophecy. So if you don't toe the line with us with regard to Islam and what we think the prophecy is, we're going to do our own thing.
And fulfilling the prophecy, meaning that Bush has to bring about a holocaust, an all-out, I mean, in the revelation sense, an all-out war in the Middle East that will lead to the conversion of all Jews into Christianity, the death of all the Muslims, and the return of Jesus.
Yeah. And he's clearly out there. So what I see this as is that this fellow is out there saying, if you don't do as we say, then we're going to do as we want to do, and we're a threat to you.
So you think this was a shot across the bow by Pat Robertson? This was a shot across George Bush's bow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right.
That's my point, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Donna. I appreciate the call. Good to hear from you. I think you're right. I really and truly do. As I said, I think that what we're seeing is that this is what happens. See, the Republican Party made a deal with the devil, metaphorically speaking. I'm not suggesting that Pat Robertson and his ilk are the devil. And you know, speaking as a Christian myself, I certainly am not trying to portray any religion, especially Christianity, as being evil. Although I think that some religious institutions certainly are. But nonetheless, I think that the Republican Party made a deal with the devil some time back, largely during the Reagan administration, you know, a metaphorical deal with the devil, in that they said, we will break with 200 years of American tradition. I mean, the closest that we and bring, we will break with 200 years of American tradition and bring into politics religion, bring religion into politics, and use federal tax dollars taken from everybody of all religions and of no religion. Federal tax dollars will be handed to religious organizations. Reverend Moon got a huge chunk of it. Of course, he was a big supporter of Reagan and of Bush Sr. and continues to be the founder of the Washington Times. You see Tony Blankley on TV, you know, the editorial page editor of the Washington Times, you know, kind of the face of Reverend Moon for the United States, in my opinion. And Reverend Moon, of course, getting a big piece of the action. Evangelical churches getting a big piece of the action. Pretty much everybody else being left out in the cold. And now they're getting, now the Republican Party is having to, you know, they're having to dance to the tune. I mean, they brought this group into the party. And this is something that nobody had ever done before. I mean, no politician. Politicians, you look back, you know, Abraham Lincoln would say, you know, the blessings of God on our country and things like that. But, you know, starting in 1812, James Madison vetoed the first piece of legislation that would have given federal money to a church, saying that this would create a dangerous precedent. It would open a door that would be difficult to close. About the closest that we ever got to this melding of church and state, was in 1954. It might have been 53. It was during the McCarthy era, during the anti-communist hysteria in the United States, and the argument was made with that the communists were godless, and they were. I mean, you know, the official position of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union was that religion, you know, to quote Karl Marx, was the opiate of the masses, and therefore religion was not going to be allowed in the state. And that because the communists were godless, we had to assert our godliness to differentiate ourselves from them. And so the phrase, one nation under God, just the phrase under God, it was one nation, indivisible, was inserted, but the under God was inserted into the Pledge of Allegiance as part of Congress's way at that time of saying, you know, thumbing our nose at the godless commies. And tipping their hat to the McCarthy faction within the Republican Party, which largely had control at the time, at least controlled the White House. Eisenhower was president, and that's about as close as we ever got until Reagan came along, and then this gravy train, you know, shoveling money to the churches began, and now they're saying, you got to dance to our tune, or we're going to bring you down. And I think this is a dangerous time for the Republican Party. Frankly, I think it's a dangerous time for the United States as a result of this decision that was made back in the 1980s by Republican operatives for purely political purposes. 10 minutes before the hour.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. Do you have a dust mask? Well, if you use a bagless vacuum and you're sensitive to dust, a leading consumer magazine products testing magazine warns you should wear a dust mask. But here's a better idea. Try my newest hypoallergenic 8-pound Auric XL risk-free for 30 days. It uses triple-walled disposable filter bags. Try emptying a bagless vacuum and see what happens. Dust gets all over your hands and face and back into the room and on the kitchen counter. And you get to breathe it in? I believe a vacuum should capture the dust, not your lungs. That's why with my Auric XL, the filter bags are self-sealing. What goes in the bag stays in the bag, even when you empty it. So try my hypoallergenic 8-pound Auric XL free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200. Then if you still want a bagless vacuum, I'll send you a dust mask to wear.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Nationwide survey asked kids what they want out of life, and the answers might surprise you. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. The typical American child gets a lot of video games, clothes, and trips to the mall. But is that what they really want? An organization called the Center for a New American Dream put the question to kids across the United States. More than 2,000 responded to the survey with essays and artwork. Betsy Taylor compiled their answers in a book called What Kids Want That Money Can't Buy.
What kids really want is they want to be kids. They want an opportunity to slow down. They just want more time because kids, like adults, are getting squeezed to always do more, perform, stay ahead of the pack. They feel they've got to get perfectly equipped for the future or they're going to be left behind, and they're tired.
Taylor says kids want more time with family and friends and more control over their lives.
Kids today have 25% less leisure time than they did just two decades ago. They have more homework, more programmed activities. School days are getting longer. PE has been eliminated in many places. The arts are being eliminated. There's kind of a culture in our society where youth have to get right to it, starting in kindergarten.
Taylor blames our more-is-better consumer culture for the growing pressure on kids. She says they're bombarded with commercials telling them that having more stuff makes life better. But Taylor says when children have an opportunity to talk about what they really want, they reveal a desire to slow things down and spend more time with family, friends, pets, and nature. Taylor urges parents to take their kids camping, go for a walk, or visit their cousins. She says parents might assume their kids would prefer TV or a trip to the mall, but that's not what kids really want. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Build a village, baby. They're large enough to be a town.
And welcome back. Four and a half minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. George W. Bush talking about it's hard work. I thought this is a great little clip that was put together by somebody who had listened to the second debate, as I recall it was. Here's George Bush asking an important question.
It's hard work. It's hard work. And it's hard work. It is hard work. It is hard work. Hard work. You know, it's hard work. It's hard work. Everybody knows it's hard work. We've done a lot of hard work. I see on the TV screens how hard it is. Yeah, the troops would wonder, how can I follow this guy?
Yeah. Good question. 27% of his time on vacation. Lied us into a war. brought the economy to its knees, promoting environmental policies that are rolling back the quality of our air and water, cutting benefits to our soldiers. How can anyone follow this president? That's a good question. Good question. We folks in the chat room are having great fun with this Bush's Lord website, by the way. This is just great. I have it on the screen here. Bush's Lord Ministries, showing our leader in the truest holy light, it says across the top, bushslord.com. Welcome to Bush's Lord. Our purpose is to bring you demonstration to our media-supported claim that George W. Bush is indeed not only our nation's leader, but our spiritual lighthouse and embodied salvation. And then news update. Much thanks to Brother Schmog over at the Manly Men for George Bush Brigade for this fine example of our Savior's sovereign claim to spiritual sanctity. And there's a whole bunch of photographs of George Bush with halos. And these are actual real photos. I've been noticing these, how the White House has been releasing these. You know, he'll get his head positioned just right in front of the Great Seal or just right in front of, some kind of a light. And he has a halo. And there's the whole series of pictures here on this. And then, of course, there's a link to Left Behind book by Tim LaHaye, which you can buy at Amazon.com. Remarkable. Remarkable. What's happening to the Republican Party? Where's it going? We shall find out. We shall find out. In the meantime, George is getting ready to buy flu vaccine. He's going to buy drugs from Canada. Yeah. Well, he can do it, but you can't. You can't. It's against the law for you to do it. He might be dangerous. It's the Tom Hartman program, Truth and Common Sense in Broadcasting for a Change.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. After hearing reports of serious workplace violations, the Brooklyn-based Fifth Avenue Committee launched an investigation of their own with shocking results. In a recently revealed report, organizers document several cases where supermarket janitors were working 14-hour shifts overnight without paid overtime.
And not only are they not getting overtime or in many cases not even minimum wage, but supermarket managers lock them in.
Artemio Guerra is organizing director for the Fifth Avenue Committee and found 36 grocery stores that were locking in their workers overnight.
It's illegal. They're violating fire code regulations. We're violating, obviously, the OSHA standards, you know, safety and health standards for the workplace. They're violating, somebody will even claim that they're violating the civil rights of these workers by falsely imprisoning them. They do it because they can, and they do it because the workers are very vulnerable and they're not going to complain.
A gay appointee has resigned in New York City over the mayor's opposition to legislation that would expand domestic partner benefits. Matt Foreman, executive director of the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, wrote to the mayor saying he had to resign out of principle. Scheduled to take effect on October 27th, the law would require companies with city contracts worth at least $100,000 to provide health, family, and bereavement benefits to domestic partners, gay or straight. The city council passed the legislation in May, and Mayor Michael Bloomberg vetoed it, but the city council overrode the veto. Last week, the Bloomberg administration sued to stop the new law. Bloomberg spokesman Jordan Borowitz said the administration filed suit because the law violates state and federal law. Picket lines of union electricians and carpenters formed near the construction site of a new Kroger supermarket in Ann Arbor, Michigan. The workers, represented by the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 252, are upset that the contractor is using out-of-town labor to get around a higher prevailing wage for local union members. They say that the Bosselman Corporation isn't paying the level of wages set by the U.S. Labor Department for the local market.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. When it comes to raising cash for candidates, big-time political fundraisers are strictly bipartisan. Both Bush and Kerry agree Iran and Iraq have supported terrorism, and both candidates say that those who harbor or finance terrorism are just as guilty. What does that mean when the 27 leading fundraisers for both Bush and Kerry do just that? 19 Bush and 9 Kerry fundraisers have been found guilty of running companies that did business with terror-supporting regimes in the past. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
So, Jasper, how was your year?
Excellent. This administration gives the best returns ever.
Do tell.
Well, the money I paid to a lobbying firm in Washington brought in over $50 million in overseas contracts.
Oh, yes, lobbying pays.
Are you still into commodities, Max?
No, I'm funding politicians. My campaign contributions got me over $100 million worth of regulation waivers.
Well done, Max.
Today's wisest investments are in politics. Where are you throwing your money?
Easily paid for by billionairesforbush.com.
Am I the only one who wants to say to Donald Trump, please, Donnie, please take your orange-dyed, bad comb-over hairdo and your grotesquely inflated ego and go away? The Donald, as he likes to be known, is the self-promoting high society celebrity who vamps shamelessly as a hard-nosed CEO on the reality TV show called The Apprentice. He also has a book out called Trump, How to Get Rich. In both the show and the book, Donnie poses as a very rich, successful businessman. He is rich, but he didn't get there himself. Instead, he got rich the old-fashioned way. He inherited a New York City real estate fortune from his daddy. And as for being a business success, you might want to ask investors in his struggling casino empire about that. Trump Hotels and Casino Resorts is the one business venture that he launched on his own, his claim to corporate success. It's crumbling. Worse, it's about to crash. Only 2 weeks after signing a new contract with NBC to pose as a business mogul on The Apprentice for another season, his real-life corporation announced a quarterly loss of $49 million. Indeed, Trump Hotels has never been profitable in its decade-long history, and it is stuck so deeply in some $2 billion of debt that Trump's own auditors say there is substantial doubt about whether it can survive. Donnie says it's not his fault. This has nothing to do with me, he whined. Yoo-hoo, your Trumpness, you're the CEO and chairman of the board. Investors and analysts lay the blame squarely at the Donald's feet, accusing him of ineffective management, slipshod financial practices, and a lack of competitive business vision. From his own board members and creditors, the CEO is about to hear the trademark phrase he uses on his TV show, you're fired. This is Jim Hightower saying, it couldn't happen to a more deserving guy. What a fraud.
I have these nightmares. This taco, not just an ordinary taco, but this big evil taco is haunting me.
Guacamole.
You see, I was exposed to credit cards in college, and I wasn't the most responsible person back then.
Go, go, go!
I mean, I heard the words credit card and thought, hey, free money! Plane ticket to spring break? Credit card. New skis? Credit card. 135 taco dinners? Bam! Credit card. But hey, it's not too late to do something about your credit. Get ScorePower from Equifax.com. ScorePower gives you your credit report, credit score, and it puts you on the road toward the credit you deserve for just $14.95. So, check out Equifax.com today and get that taco you ate 7 years ago out of your life.
Get ScorePower.
your power at Equifax.com or 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Adios, Taco.
Get the power. Score power at Equifax.com.
The man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 7 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Our telephone number 1-866-889-8894. If you have thoughts you want to share, is Tommy Thompson, the Secretary of Health and Human Services, a communist? Is he participating in some sort of evil dictatorship by asking that pharmacies and drug wholesalers not raise the price of the increasingly rare flu vaccine? We have with us Dr. Andrew Bernstein from the AynRand.org. Ayn Rand, what, a foundation?
Ayn Rand Institute.
Institute. Thank you. And it's AynRand.org. And always great to have you here, Andrew. I'm so glad you could be with us. I know you can only be with us for a few minutes. You got to catch a plane in about 15 minutes.
Well, I have to get over to the University of Chicago. I'm giving a lecture there tonight, but it's always good to be on your show, Tom.
All the better. Well, yeah, I'm pleased to have you here. You're taking the position that, you know, there's nothing wrong with a situation where only the wealthy can afford flu vaccines.
Well, I don't think of it in those terms. I mean, I think that if you own something or I own something, then I have the moral right. It's mine. I have the moral right to charge any price that I want for it. And I think and a customer who's willing and able to pay that price has the moral right to do so. I don't think the government in a free society should be granted the power to dictate to me what I could charge for something that I own.
You know, if we were talking about flat-screen TVs, I would agree with you. Absolutely. I'm right there with you. If we're talking about, motorcycles, or if we're talking about, you know, bicycles, any kind of basic consumer good. But here you have a product that, first of all, the free market really doesn't even have the ability to work with, because you don't know a year in advance what the demand is going to be like. I mean, this is, in my opinion, where the administration really has failed so miserably, is they should have said to the vaccine manufacturers, we think that you're going to be able to sell 80 million doses this year, but there may be demand for 100 million, so we'll guarantee 100 billion, we'll guarantee to buy the surplus and destroy it if necessary at taxpayer expense, just so that you will make 100 million doses and not lose profit. And that would cause the vaccine manufacturers to be falling all over themselves to compete for that bid, and there'd be no problem. And instead, we've got this mess because they're trying to use the free market in a situation where some years flu is bad, some years it's good, some years flu manufacturers lose money, some years they make money, and there's very few companies willing to play that game.
Well, I think I respectfully disagree, Tom. I think the free market is the solution. If, for example, if the FDA didn't impose restrictions on the sale of flu vaccines in America, we would have no problem buying them from foreign producers. The flu vaccines are there. According to the story I read in the L.A. Times, the FDA restricts the sale of the flu vaccines made by foreign producers in this country.
They restrict it by virtue of it being a prescription drug, you mean?
Let me put it this way. I think we do away with the FDA, let patients in concert with their physicians choose the medications, and not government bureaucrats who don't know the first thing about medicine decide. I think freedom means choice. Let the patients in conjunction with their physicians choose the medications, not the bureaucrats at the FDA.
But the restriction you're talking about is the fact that flu vaccine is considered a prescription-only drug. It requires a prescription. In other words, the government says if you acquire this without a prescription, you've committed a crime. That's the restriction you're talking about, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that, and I think for the FDA to determine that is ridiculous. I think what I'm talking about here is that, according to Thompson himself, significant quantities of foreign dosages could be sold in this country, but the FDA is not allowing them to be sold here. That's what I've read in the LA Times. And I think that if that's true, and it makes sense, that's the way bureaucrats operate, that restriction on the free market is what's responsible for the shortage. I think government restrictions and government price controls always lead to shortages, whereas in the free market, when the price is allowed to rise, producers manufacture more of a product, there's a greater supply, and there's no shortage of the product, and eventually the price comes down because of the greater supply.
Yeah, again, by and large, I agree with you if we're talking about flat-screen TVs or computers or something. But here we're talking about something that, I mean, last year, 36,000 people died from the flu. The best estimates right now are that that number is going to triple this year because of the lack of the availability of vaccine. In other words, over 100,000 people are going to die this year because this administration failed to plan for this, or because it didn't have a public policy, a public health policy that encouraged the production of vaccine. And it's not just this administration, of course. It was the Clinton administration before it as well, in my opinion. This is a failure of public policy, because this is not something. I mean, isn't there a point, Andrew Bernstein, with AynRand.org here, isn't there a point at which we collectively say, you know, there are some things that affect all of us so completely. They affect all of us, you know, whether we're rich or poor, whether we're healthy or sick, no matter what, they affect all of us together. And therefore, we have a shared, you know, it's part of the commons. We have a shared stake in this. And so we're going to take actions that might not be consistent with the free market.
No, I think the very fact that we need some good is all the more reason why we need a greater supply of it. And I think a rational political philosophy and a rational moral philosophy and the history of capitalism show that private, profit-driven producers are the ones who produce an enormous supply. We could ask the question, people need to eat, too. Why doesn't the price of bread shoot up to $100 a loaf? And the reason for that is that the government doesn't impose restrictions on the price of bread, and consequently produce an enormous supply of bread, and the price is low. If the same principle applies to pharmaceuticals, Tom, if the government stays the hell out of the pharmaceutical industry can estimate how much flu vaccine is necessary. They produce the supply, and the supply is there. It's no different in that regard than automobiles or bread.
But bread isn't the kind of thing that if you misuse it, it can kill you. It isn't the sort of thing that you need expert advice on how to use.
But that's why physicians are the ones you go to for this. The FDA or the government bureaucrats shouldn't be involved in determining who produces this or how much is produced.
But the reason the people
in this country, but let the patient in conjunction with his physician make that decision.
But the reason people are forced to go to physicians by virtue of the fact that these substances are illegal to self-administer. I mean, if you were to say, okay, let's just make, you know, vaccines the same as throat lozenges, and they can be sold over the counter, but they have to be injected. And so you got people, wiping them on their arms and sticking themselves with pins. You got people using dirty needles. You got people, I mean, what a mess.
I have no problem with physicians prescribing medications. My point is, get the bureaucrats out of this and let the physicians decide whether medication is going to be prescribed.
Then,
right now, the physicians don't have that choice because the FDA will not allow foreign producers of flu vaccines to be sold in the United States. And I think let the physicians decide in conjunction with their patients, not the bureaucrats at the FDA who are not medical experts.
So it sounds to me like you're saying that you agree that we should have bureaucrats telling us that we can only get our medication through our physicians.
No, I don't agree. I don't agree with that at all.
Then
I think
there's a logical inconsistency here, Andrew.
Very simply, is that patients should go to their doctors and in concert with their doctors make that decision.
Right, but who's going to go to their doctor if the doctor's going to cost $100? And on the other hand, they can go on the internet, or they can go to the drugstore down the street, or they can go to the kid who set up a counter, you know, a lemonade stand on the corner, and buy the same product for half that price.
Then fine. So be it.
And then they take it and they kill themselves.
Individual will be responsible for his own health, just like I'm responsible for what I eat. And if I eat poison instead of food, I'm going to die, right? And if I take medications that are going to kill me, then I'll die. But I think freedom means responsibility, and let responsible adults take care of themselves in that way and realize, as rational human beings, that I go to a doctor when I'm sick, and I take my children to a doctor when I'm sick.
And you're willing to assume that everybody's going to behave rationally, and that if somebody doesn't have the money to be able to go to the doctor, They'll just figure out how to give themselves injections.
Well, Tom, we know people are irrational, but we also know that the government can't protect them from their irrationality. The war on drugs shows us that. It's a failure. The war on alcohol, the prohibition was a failure. The war on guns. It's impossible to prevent irrational people from harming themselves by their irrational behavior. And this paternalistic nanny state is not only immoral in preventing me from acting on my own judgment, it's futile. It can't possibly protect people from their own irrationality if that's their choice. But there's no reason to impose these governmental restrictions on rational people. Again, let patients in conjunction with the physicians make the decision.
So those who can't afford a physician.
My doctor?
Those who can't afford a physician, they're just... It's tough.
In a free market, there's an enormous supply. Physicians aren't expensive in a free market. The government mandated healthcare system we have today is a movement towards socialism. On a free market, around the time of World War II, what did it cost to go to a doctor? $5? Doctors even made house calls back then. Get the government out of our lives, and we'll have a much greater supply of physicians, and the price comes down as it was 50 or 60 years ago.
I have to say you're a true utopianist. I would say that the reason that the price was of medical care was lower 50 or 60 years ago, because the AMA was still restricting admission to medical school then, was because virtually every dimension of the healthcare industry was required by law to be a not-for-profit corporation rather than a for-profit corporation. Hospitals could not operate on a for-profit basis. They had to operate on a not-for-profit basis, and so they served the local communities.
No, I mean, private doctors always operate for profit. They want to make money. That's not the problem. The problem is third-party payments, whether it's the Medicare, Medicaid, or most people have their health insurance through their employers, which is basically government mandated.
Okay.
When people pay their own money, they buy less of the service. The price stays, the demand is down, the price is down. That's the reason why the medical costs have shot up in the last 50 or 60 years. People aren't paying out of their own money anymore. It's third-party payers. My point is, a free market produces a great supply. The whole history of capitalism shows that. It's true with doctors as well as with automobiles, computers, all over the place.
Again, by and large, I agree with you. However, I'm saying that there are some areas where I think that we just, we can't do that because it has to do with life and death. Let's take a call from a guest. We've only got a minute and a half left. Paul in Santa Fe on the line. Hey, Paul.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to clear something up. There's a piece of misinformation that's flying around inside this conversation regarding the shortage of the flu vaccine.
Right.
It was started by George Bush, and the LA Times and the New York Times both picked it up and started ranting about it. This company in England that was shut down that supposedly was the...
It's actually an American company. Yeah,
it's an American company, and it wasn't shut down by the FDA. It was shut down. The FDA, frankly, gave it a clean bill of health.
Right. It was the British authorities that discovered the contamination. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And that reality really doesn't, I don't think, affect this discussion of whether or not we the people collectively should make sure that we the people are all healthy. I mean, Andrew, if we don't make sure that even the poor people who can't afford the shots get the shot so that they don't get sick, then rich folks they're going to be exposed to more illness. I mean, isn't that a problem? You got 10 seconds. I'll give you the last word.
The shortage of vaccines is exacerbated by government action. You get the government out of the medical field and the pharmaceutical field. The whole history of capitalism shows us there'll be an abundant supply, and the poor will be able to get the medication as well as the middle class and the rich.
Okay, thank you. Andrew Bernstein, IonRand.org. Thanks for being with us.
Good to be here, Tom.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. All of the attention given to Halliburton and their no-bid contract in Iraq would make you think that it is not a regular practice. But a new report from the Center of Public Integrity reveals that at least $362 billion was spent on no-bid contracts by the Pentagon since 1998. But the Pentagon did not stop there, rewarding $255 billion in cost-plus contracts that allow companies to spend as much as they deem necessary on a job, including an agreed-upon profit.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Oh, I am just a student, sir, and only want to learn. But it's hard to read through the rising smoke from the books that you like to burn. So I like.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Mike in Orlando, Florida, on the line. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program.
Tom, you're pretty knowledgeable. Is it true that reptiles abandon their young at birth?
You know, I don't know.
Well,
sorry.
I was understanding, and that would explain a lot of the,
you know,
the last guess.
Yeah, I don't believe so. I don't think so. I know that, you know, reptiles. Well, you know, I just don't know.
The question I would have is, and I know you can't speak for him, but I'm sure he wouldn't think that we should abandon any laws, you know, against murder or anything like that, and just make it a free-for-all, correct?
You know, I've never had that discussion with Andrew. He's been on the show a number of times, and I'm familiar with the Ayn Rand philosophy. You know, this is the foundational thinking of libertarianism, which is the foundational thinking of the hardcore conservative, you know, movement in the United States. And I think that, you know, their assertion is that there should be laws and police and armies to protect people from violence and fraud. That's it. You know, violence and fraud. That's their mantra.
Protecting them from violence from who? Other humans?
From other humans, yeah.
So humans are only honest when they become a corporation, is what he's saying.
Well, you know, they're utopianists, these guys. They're true believers.
They're corporate utopians.
Well, and yeah, capitalists,
otherwise they
actually
would abandon any law because they would think that everybody could always be honest, whether they're with a corporation or just represent themselves.
Could be. Again, I don't want to try and argue Andrew's positions, but I can tell you that these folks, much of the conservative movement in the United States, and certainly the libertarian aspect of the conservative movement in the United States, and the Ayn Rand folks, the objectivists, they referred to themselves, are largely of the opinion that that capitalism is the cure for everything.
Right. You might want to consider asking him at that next time.
Yeah.
As far as his stance on that's concerned, because there seems to be a clear difference where they put corporations versus people, and where they can trust people when they become companies. But
yeah, they have no problem with corporations.
Right.
I mean, you know, no problem with the corporate form. And then of course you say, well, you know, a corporation requires the state to exist, right? Because you know the state defines the rules by which the corporation plays the game of business.
It requires people to exist.
Right. I know. And this is the problem with utopian thinking, is that it ultimately, you know, you push it to its logical extremes and it breaks down. As you know, it's the same thing with the neocons who believed that if we could just throw Saddam Hussein out, that we could install democracy at the barrel of a gun, and completely ignored nationalism in Iraq, you know, in their plans for the Middle East. It's idealists, you know, well motivated perhaps, well, you know, true believers, who don't take into account the pragmatic realities of life, can do some really destructive stuff. And lead destructive movements. It's the same thing with the Bolsheviks back, you know, in 1918 and before. We've seen this over and over and over again. True believers creating movements. Mike, thanks for the call. I got to move along here. Alan Scranton, Pennsylvania. Hey, Alan, what's up?
Yes, driving around the country, I see a lot of big chain stores and big businesses, but I don't see so many small businesses. It seems like the Bush administration has done a lousy job to help it. Small business. What do you say about this?
Yeah, it's not just the Bush administration. The Clinton administration, the previous Bush administration, the Reagan administration. This whole thing tracks back to when Ronald Reagan essentially said he was going to stop enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act, and thus allowed, you know, laissez-faire capitalism, unfettered capitalism, allowing the big to eat the middle-sized fish and the small fish until there's nothing left but big fish. And, you know, it's destructive to democracy, in my opinion, Alan. Tony in Washington, D.C. You just got a half a minute left here, Tony. What's up?
No, I just want to real quick, keep doing what you're doing. Why would Pat Robertson make that statement so close to the election? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks, Tony. Well, as I said, I think it was a shot across the bow of George Bush's ship. I think it was his way of saying, you better start towing the line. You better start doing what we want. You better, you know, start bringing about that Armageddon thing that you had told us you were going to do, or we're gonna bring you down. I think it was just a raw, naked assertion of power on the part of Pat Robertson. Right after this break, we're going to be talking with Michael Trogett about elections and polls. It should be fascinating. Stick around.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. After hearing reports of serious workplace violations, the Brooklyn-based Fifth Avenue Committee launched an investigation of their own with shocking results. In a recently revealed report, organizers document several cases where supermarket janitors were working 14-hour shifts overnight without paid overtime.
And not only are they not getting overtime or, in many cases, not even minimum wage, but supermarket managers lock them in.
Artemio Guerra is organizing director for the Fifth Avenue Committee and found 36 grocery stores that were locking in their workers overnight.
It's illegal, If they're violating fire code regulations, we're violating, obviously, the OSHA standards, you know, safety and health standards for the workplace. They're violating, somebody will even claim that they're violating the civil rights of these workers by falsely imprisoning them. They do it because they can, and they do it because the workers are very vulnerable and they're not going to complain.
A gay appointee has resigned in New York City over the mayor's opposition to legislation that would expand domestic partner benefits. Matt Foreman, executive director of the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, wrote to the mayor saying he had to resign out of principle. Scheduled to take effect on October 27th, the law would require companies with city contracts worth at least $100,000 to provide health, family, and bereavement benefits to domestic partners, gay or straight. The city council passed the legislation in May, and Mayor Michael Bloomberg vetoed it, but the city council overrode the veto. Last week, the Bloomberg administration sued to stop the new law. Bloomberg spokesman Jordan Borowitz said the administration filed suit because the law violates state and federal law. Picket lines of union electricians and carpenters formed near the construction site of a new Kroger supermarket in Ann Arbor, Michigan. The workers, represented by the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 252, are upset that the contractor is using out-of-town labor to get around a higher prevailing wage for local union members. They say that the Bosselman Corporation isn't paying the level of wages set by the U.S. Labor Department for the local market.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. When it comes to raising cash for candidates, big-time political fundraisers are strictly bipartisan. Both Bush and Kerry agree Iran and Iraq have supported terrorism, and both candidates say that those who harbor or finance terrorism are just as guilty. What does that mean when the 27 leading fundraisers for both Bush and Kerry do just that? 19 Bush and 9 Kerry fundraisers have been found guilty of running companies that did business with terror-supporting regimes in the past. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
No one knows what it's like to feel these feelings.
And welcome back. Now, I think we're all starting to figure it out. It's November 2nd is getting closer and closer here. 12 days to regime change. Welcome back. Tom Hartman with you. Michael Traugott has some thoughts on this. Professor and Chair, Department of Communication Studies, University of Michigan, Senior Research Scientist, Center for Political Studies, Institute for Social Research. Michael, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Polls. The polls are all over the place. One day Bush is up, the next day he's down. It's likely voters, unlikely voters, registered voters, unregistered voters. First of all, how do pollsters distinguish between registered voters and likely voters?
Well, both of these concepts, registered voters and likely voters, involve self-reporting. So in a typical telephone survey, especially at this stage of a campaign, a household will be called with a number selected at random, and a person will be selected for the interview, and right near the beginning of the interview, they'll ask this person whether they're a registered voter or not.
Mm-hmm.
If they're registered, they'll continue with the interview, and if they're not, they'll probably stop. And then they will ask a series of questions, and this varies from polling firm to polling firm, that they will use to determine their likelihood of voting. Some firms use one question, other firms use up to 7 questions.
Like, did you vote in the last election, for example?
Yes.
They don't just come out and say, are you likely to vote this year?
No, they don't usually do that. They ask people how interested they are in the campaign, whether they know where people in their neighborhood go to vote. Did you vote in the last election?
Yeah, this being because I know back, I used to own an ad agency, and years ago we would run focus groups. I remember we did one for a perfume company, and when we asked, we were doing this in a mall, and we were just, you know, going out in the mall and saying, we'll pay you $5 if you'll come in and smell some perfume and give us some feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And when we asked these women, would you pay $40 for an ounce of this perfume? They almost always said yes. But when you ask them, do you think the average person would pay $40 for an ounce of this perfume. Most of them said no, and that was them telling the truth. In other words, when you ask them a question that involves them personally, they tell you what makes them look good,
think you want to hear.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas when you ask them a little more abstract question, you get the truth. And so you're suggesting the pollsters, by and large, competent pollsters, do something very similar to that. They try to get go about it sideways to get the accurate answer.
That's right.
Yeah. So how do pollsters deal with all these new registrants? I mean, we have apparently in this election more people registering to vote than within a 1 year period prior to the election than we've ever seen before. I mean, it's mind boggling.
Generally, this is not a problem as long as this person who's a new registrant remembers that they did register to vote. A lot of these new registrants are signing forms in a kind of a casual atmosphere, like going to a rock concert or something like that. Mm-hmm. But as I mentioned earlier, typically there's a self-report to the question, are you registered? So if they are registered, even if it's recently, and they say yes, then they would go on with the interview.
Right, but then when they ask if they're using as their qualifying question for likely voter, have you voted in the past, and this is a new registrant, and the person says no, but they may be a very likely voter. I mean, doesn't this kind of screw things up?
Well, if they relied only on that one question, it could. But if they are combining a series of questions, it wouldn't necessarily. Each person could have there could be four or five different levels of probability attached to voting, depending upon the answer to the series of questions.
Yeah. We're talking with Michael Traugott. Right, professor and chair, Department of Communication Studies at the University of Michigan. Professor Traugott, I recently saw a news story where it was talking about a Gallup poll that was showing George Bush ahead by, 3 or 4 points or whatever it was. And then when they showed the methodology, they said that they had that 38%, these are from memory, these are not accurate numbers, but it was like this kind of neighborhood. 38% of the people that were responding were Republicans, 32% were Democrats, and the rest were, something else or, unaffiliated. And yet, when you look at the division of Republicans and Democrats, actual registered voters in the United States, it doesn't break out that way, and it hasn't for a long time. I'm not sure it ever has, frankly. How do they account? Why does that disparity occur? How is it, for example, that the polls just before the 2000 election were showing that Gore and Bush were in a dead heat, and yet Gore got 500,000 more votes than Bush, that the pollsters, by and large, missed that?
Well, it's been relatively common in the course of this campaign especially for there to be characteristic differences in the partisanship of samples of different pollsters. The Gallup poll for the last several weeks has tended to show more Republicans in its sample than other organizations. And the Zogby poll, for example, has a tendency to show more Democrats in its sample than other organizations. This could be from a number of factors, but the two most common are the way in which they weight data to account for people they missed.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that Zogby weights by party identification, which most other polling organizations don't. Mm-hmm. In his case, this turns out to be a correction for the underrepresentation of what he thinks were Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
In the Gallup survey, we don't know whether it's respondent selection or it's got something to do with this likelihood index that they use. But even if you were to look at, for example, President Bush's approval rating, you would find that generally his approval rating has been higher for the last several months in the Gallup poll than in others, and it's been lower in the Zogby poll than it has been in others, which is attributable to these differences in partisanship in the sample. There's a technical term that we use for this. It's called house effects. The characteristic differences between one polling organization and another, that's a function of the methods that they use.
Yeah, well, in biology, it's referred to as sample bias. I mean, isn't the same. And isn't there?
It may not be sample bias in the sense. It could be sample bias, but it may not be sample bias in the sense that it is not the way the original respondents are selected.
But it's how they're
something
corrected
that's
for.
Done after the data are collected, either in this weighting process or in the definition of likely voters.
Right.
It would be a bias, but not due to sampling.
Right. Now, but this is really significant stuff because there's this bandwagon effect that is well documented. In fact, it's something that every you know, product marketer tries to do. I mean, you try to create the fad. You want this to be the new thing. People, you know, there's this huge herd effect, and people figure, well, whoever's ahead must be the best candidate. Particularly, I mean, it seems like, you know, in this election, it's coming down to the undecided voters, which you know, maybe at the risk of sounding condescending, the dumb voters or something. I mean, how could anybody at this point in time not have an opinion, you know, a strong opinion about one of these candidates, and yet that's what it's coming down to, and it seems that most of these so-called undecided voters are really people who are just, you know, following the bandwagon. They're gonna go with the crowd, and so when the pollsters come out and say, hey, the bandwagon is Bush or the bandwagon is Kerry, then the poll itself becomes part of the political influencing process, does it not?
Well, in addition to the bandwagon effect that you just described, there's another counterbalancing effect called an underdog effect,
mm-hmm.
whereby people decide to support the candidate who's behind in the polls.
Yeah.
And as you indicated, these underdog and bandwagon effects have been pretty well documented. They're most likely to occur for people who are not very well informed and not very involved in politics, which also means that they're not so likely to vote. But in a very close election, of course, small shifts can make a difference, especially if they occur in one of these key battleground states.
Yeah. And, you know, we have a whole huge chunk of demographic groups, age groups, race, gender, religion, political parties, things like this. And some of these seem to actually line up with a particular political affiliations. You know, African Americans tend to vote Democratic more often. Evangelical Christians, white Christians, tend to vote more Republican or conservative. How do pollsters filter these things, or do they just stick to the party affiliation stuff?
Well, they don't have any way really to correct for these kinds of things or to adjust for these kinds of things because they don't have a standard reference to adjust to. When pollsters weight their samples by age, race, or sex, they usually are doing this with reference to the census data. And one reason that the Zogby method for weighting to party identification is subject to some criticism is that while party identification is relatively stable, it doesn't have the same stability as these other personal characteristics. And there are studies that show that party identification changes over time within the same person, sometimes even within the campaign for the same person as they decide, you know, about who they're going to vote for.
In other words, they decide who they're going to vote for, and then they say that they are of that party.
Yeah, it's for most people, they have this strong, relatively stable partisan attachment, and then they pick that candidate. But for some people, again, the less involved, they bring their party identification into consonance with the way that they decide to vote.
Yeah, this would be like how the Reagan Democrats became Bush Republicans.
Yes, although most of them actually
years.
Went back to being Democrats after Ronald Reagan.
Uh-huh.
But they were Republicans in the short term, that's right.
Yeah, interesting. And one final question. I appreciate you being with us here, Dr. Traugott. What about single-issue voters, people who are absolutely, you know, they're in their mind, the only dog in the race is national security or gay rights or abortion or flag burning or whatever it may be, guns. We get regular callers to this program. What percentage of Americans are so focused on a single issue that a candidate's position on a single issue can swing them, and should they be filtered out of a large sample or should they be included? What's the consequence of this?
Well, the proportion of these single issue voters is not very great. That is, people who would vote against what otherwise you would think would be the driving forces, for example, their party identification. And so, therefore, there's no, you know, there's no particular need to make adjustments in the sample for these people. I would say that typically it's probably 15% or less.
I see. Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Michael Traugott. Professor, am I pronouncing your last name correctly?
Yes.
Okay, good, great. Professor and Chair, Department of Communication Studies, University of Michigan, thank you so much for being with us.
Good to be with you too, Tom.
Thank you. Bye now. It's 15 minutes before the hour. Our mislead of the day from misleader.org, the daily mislead. Bush misleads on flu vaccine. President Bush has tried to avoid any responsibility for the flu vaccine shortage by making misleading statements. Well, I'd say he's tried to avoid responsibility for pretty much everything. There is that sign on his desk that says the buck stops over there. And then it's got arrows pointing in about 9 different directions. During the presidential debate last Wednesday, President Bush said the problem was, quote, we relied upon a company out of England, end quote. Well, that isn't true. Chiron Corporation, the company whose vaccine plant was contaminated, is a California company subject to regulation by the U.S. government that operates a factory in England. During the debate, President Bush said, we took the right action and didn't allow contaminated medicine into our country, end quote. That isn't true either. It was the British authorities who, after inspecting the plant, revoked the factory's license on October 5th. In June 2003, the U.S. FDA inspected the Chiron plant. Initially, they found that there was bacterial contamination, but later announced the problems were corrected to their satisfaction, allowed the plant to continue to operate. It was the British who came in and shut it down. Now, moving along, we find the CIA now has produced a report. Well, here, this says it all. This is a report by Greg Miller in the Los Angeles Times. Headline, Lawmakers Prod CIA for Pre-9/11 Accountability Report. Again, accountability being the word that most terrorizes the Bush administration. The ranking members of the House Intelligence Committee have asked the CIA to turn over an internal report on whether agency employees should be held accountable for intelligence failures leading up to the September 11th attacks, congressional officials said Tuesday. The CIA has not responded to the request, raising concerns among some Democrats in Congress that the report is being withheld to avoid embarrassment for the Bush administration in the final weeks before the presidential election. The report was drafted in response to a demand from Congress nearly 2 years ago for the CIA to conduct an internal inquiry into the performance of agency personnel before the attacks. So, you know, play politics with the CIA. Yeah, sure. Let's put Porter Goss in there. Good old politician. At the same time, we see now the Associated Press finds the fifth study by the World Wildlife Federation, reported by the Associated Press, examining the ecological footprint or environmental impact of the 6.1 billion people on planet Earth. Kind of wraps it up with a headline, consumption of resources outstripping planet's ability to cope. People are plundering the world's resources at a pace that outstrips the planet's capacity to sustain life. In its regular Living Planet report, the Worldwide Fund for Nature said humans currently consume 20% more natural resources than the Earth can produce. Consumption of fossil fuels increased 700% between 1961 and 2001. We are spending nature's capital faster than it can regenerate, said WWF Chief Claude Martin, launching the conservation body's 40-page study. This is stuff we need to be thinking about, folks. You know, can we continue to simply say, we're 5%, 4% of the world's population now. We consume 26% of the world's energy. And we're just going to keep on doing this, and in fact, the kind of energy we're going to consume is oil. We're not going to look at sun and solar power and wind power and things. And somebody else has the oil, we'll just take it. What the heck? I don't think it's going to work.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, and I will send you three of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. In vacuums, bagless is a dirty word. A leading consumer testing magazine warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums. And if you own one, they advise you to wear a dust mask. I would never put the Oric name on a bagless vacuum. They're filthy. My hypoallergenic Oric XL uses triple-walled, disposable filter bags. They hold four times more than the leading brand of bagless vacuums. What goes in the Oric bag stays in the bag, including bacteria and viruses. Empty a bagless vacuum, and the dust goes right back into the room you've just cleaned. Is this sanitary? Oric cleans the air as it vacuums the floor. Try my 8-pound Oric XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200, 1-800-989-4200. It's the clean alternative to bagless vacuums.
This is a Workers' Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. After hearing reports of serious workplace violations, the Brooklyn-based Fifth Avenue Committee launched an investigation of their own with shocking results. Artemino Guerra is organizing director for the Fifth Avenue Committee.
The Fifth Avenue Committee is a nonprofit community-based organization here in Brooklyn, New York. We work primarily on the issues of housing and affordable housing development. And just lately, we've been looking at all the workers that are in our midst due to this recent gentrification of South Brooklyn, workers mainly in the low-wage industries in the neighborhood, like restaurants and supermarkets and greengrocers.
In a recently revealed report, organizers document several cases where supermarket janitors were working 14-hour shifts overnight without paid overtime.
And not only are they not getting overtime or, in many cases, not even minimum wage, but supermarket managers locked them in.
Guerra found 36 grocery stores that were locking in their workers overnight.
It's illegal. They're violating fire code regulations. We're violating, obviously, the OSHA standards, you know, safety and health standards for the workplace. They're violating, somebody will even claim that they're violating the civil rights of these workers by falsely imprisoning them. They do it because they can, and they do it because the workers are very vulnerable and they're not going to complain.
After the fire department intervened, the groceries stopped the lock-ins, but Guerra believes the practice is widespread in Brooklyn.
This is happening all over the city, and we have reasons to believe this is sort of an industry practice.
Currently, Guerra is organizing a consumer campaign to ask neighborhood residents to pressure employers to raise wages by $1 per hour. With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
No matter what you are, I will always be with you.
And welcome. Welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here. Looking back at this study, the fifth study since 1998 that the WWF, the Worldwide Fund for Nature, has done, populations of terrestrial, freshwater, and marine species fell on average by 40% between 1970 and 2000. I mean, this is startling. It's like we're killing off the world so that we can have our Hummers. And it doesn't have to be that way, and it doesn't have to mean that our quality of life diminishes. In fact, our quality of life can dramatically improve if we start using appropriate energy technologies, and it could create a huge economic boom. The development of new resources. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. Marion in Nevada on the line. Hey, Marion, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I hate to harken back to another subject, but I've been listening all morning to people talking about the economy and how demand drives this and that and the other thing. And to me, there's a fundamental flaw in how we define success. Right now, our corporations define success in terms of money, not in terms of what they do, not in terms of how many jobs they provide, not in terms of how fair and balanced they are, not in terms of anything that is other than the hard money measure. And it seems to me that we need to redefine what we're about. We're not, you know, I mean, when we end our lives and we look back and say, well, I made this much money, what's that? I mean, we have to look back and say, how did I spend my time? How was my integrity? And what was my true value?
Yeah, and at the corporate level, actually, you know, there was a time in the United States, Franklin Roosevelt, of course, was the great champion of this, but it echoed all the way up through the Kennedy administration and really only started rapidly unraveling under Reagan when there was this clear and shared perception, a clear cultural belief that if somebody is going to conduct themselves in the world of business, that they have an obligation, they have a social obligation. I mean, when I was growing up as a kid, if a company was laying off people, everybody thought that was a sign of failure.
Yeah, exactly. You
know, moral failure as well as a business failure.
And the other thing is that my understanding of corporations and the ones that I've read is the ones that are truly successful start with an ideal of what we're going to do and how we're going to fit. And they value as their major asset the people that work for them.
Yeah, their vision statement and seeing their people as not just as a resource to exploit, but as part of a larger vision.
Yeah.
I agree. Well said, Marion. Thank you very much for the call and for making an important point, I think, for all of us. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today. Thanks to Ira Gravatt for engineering it, to Brad Walrod for our music, to Shelby for streaming us around the planet on radiopower.org, to Mike Toth and Ben Birch for our archives at tomhartman.com and whiterosesociety.com, or .org, rather, to Jay for our music, and to the folks in our chat room for showing up. Great to see you all. Wonderful, wonderful thoughts. See you tomorrow. Actually, I'll be back on Monday. Rama will be here tomorrow. Until then, be good.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it